Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude here every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here on a Thursday morning. And it is Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We will play them later on. So get them in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Dan Feinberg is going to join us. It is that time. Every 2 weeks, Dan joins us to talk all things television related. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him online at Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And lots of TV stuff to talk about with Dan. That's coming up. We've got a couple of funny, ridiculous little topics here about TV and movie relationships that would never, ever happen in real life. And also TV and movie times when characters in TV or movie got away with sexual harassment, just blatantly. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And today, March 28th, 2019, is the 40th anniversary of the release of one of my favorite movies of all time, Phantasm. Phantasm is this classic horror movie that's gone on to have four sequels and an intense following led by me. It was a game changer for me. One of the most seminal movies of my teenage years. I saw it in the year of 1979, particularly the summer of 1979, I ended up seeing Phantasm in the theater over 100 times, and that's not an exaggeration. I saw Phantasm mostly over the summer of 1979 over 100 times in the theater. It made that big an impact on me. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made, one of my favorite movies of all time, and it turns 40 today. So we'll talk a little bit about Phantasm and its legacy and how great it is, and the fact that I am now like friends with the writer director Don Coscarelli, and I know the cast, which completely freaks me out. If you would have told me 40 years ago today that 40 years later I would have a relationship with the people in the movie and who made the movie, I would say shut up, future Nick, and lose a few pounds, jackass. That's what I'd say to me. So, but anyway. Phantasm turns 40 today. So we're also going to talk about movies and other things that turn 40, including some gadgets and people like celebrities who turned 40 this year and other movies that turned 40. And, you know, Vic, during the newscast, you reminded me of something else that happened 40 years ago today. And I didn't even realize that today was the date. You talked about the anniversary, the 40th anniversary of Three Mile Island accident.
And it was a complete random report because I didn't know you were going to be doing this for your show. So, one of the reactors partially shut down. But, Three Mile Island.
I vividly remember when that happened. I vividly remember that. And what you want to know something really crazy? Is that about 2 weeks later, after the Three Mile Island accident happened, about 2 weeks later, the movie The China Syndrome opened. And The China Syndrome is about a nuclear reactor accident that takes place. And it's incredible.
Wow.
And it stars Jack Lemmon, Jane Fonda, and Michael Douglas. And it is a great, great movie if you've never seen it. But I'll tell you something. When that thing came out, the box office, because of what happened in real life in Pennsylvania, the box office went through the roof.
I can imagine.
For China Syndrome. And it would go on to be nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards, and deservedly so. It's a really great thriller. And the timing of it was unbelievable. But I didn't know that was today.
Yeah,
that was
40 years today.
So we'll talk a little about the Three Mile Island accident and other things that turned 40 this year in honor of the anniversary of one of the most seminal movies of my life, Phantasm. I can't believe Phantasm is 40 years old. I swear to you, I feel like I'm ancient. But in that 40 years, that movie has spawned four sequels and an army of Phantasm fans. It's incredible. And 2 years ago, they re-released it called Phantasm Remastered. And Don Coscarelli went back and actually completely beautifully remastered it digitally, and J.J. Abrams put the money up for it, because J.J. Abrams is one of the biggest Phantasm fans of all time, and, you know, called up Don Coscarelli and said, hey, listen, why don't we remaster this thing? And it looks amazing. The version that's available on Blu-ray and on DVD as part of the whole Phantasm package, which includes all five movies and a bunch of documentaries, of which I am on three of them, which is fantastic. The extras on disc 5, by the way. You can catch my Q&As and a couple of other things that I did with them. But anyway, it's very exciting, and the new remastered version looks unbelievable. It looks better than it did back in 1979. So we'll talk all about Phantasm, the 40th anniversary. But let me say hello to Tom Hush, who is my producer. We're coming up on a full week of you producing the show for the first time.
I honestly can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's flown by.
It's been great, man. It's really, really been great. And you're a Phantasm fan, right?
Yeah. I came to it because I just happened to see it playing in a video store. And it was the scene with the killer sphere.
The silver sphere scene?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, well, so I have to go watch this a million times.
I was going
to
say, if that scene doesn't suck you in, then there's something wrong with you, because it's a legendary scene. But yeah, no, it's amazing that I can't believe it's 40 years old. It's just really insane. So we'll talk about that and more of things that are 40 years old a little bit later on in the show. And as we mentioned just a couple of seconds ago, we were talking to him in the newsroom, is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well.
You were just a little teeny tot, right, when that happened?
Yeah, because I don't have any memory of it.
Yeah.
So I must have been, well, let's see, when was it? March 28th, 1979. I would have been around 7 years old.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
And on the, you know, east west coast.
Right.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, well,
it was riding my big wheel.
I was when it happened, I was 13, and it was a big story, and it was really kind of scary, and then, you know, then we go see the China Syndrome and we're like, what the hell's happening now? But so that happened 40 years ago, and we will talk about other things that happened 40 years ago and that were born 40 years ago and that are celebrating the 40th anniversary. So that's all inspired by one of my favorite movies of all time, Phantasm. So our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for your Triple Play Thursday requests. Get them in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And you can follow us also on Facebook and stay connected there at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And why not subscribe to our podcast? It's free. You can go to iTunes or anywhere you get your casts. Subscribe. It's free. Every second of each show is podcast, and it'll automatically be sent to your device. And you can listen at your leisure, bro, and check out our podcasts at WGNRadio.com. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Dan Feinberg will be here, and we're going to talk TV. The wait is over. Today, the Cubs open their season against Texas. Special pregame next year is here. That's at 2:30, and the first pitch is at 3 on WGN TV. TV party tonight. We're gonna have a TV party tonight. All right. We're gonna have a TV party. All right. Tonight. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday. It means Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, every couple of weeks, Dan Feinberg joins us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we always talk about a lot of TV, and that's what we're going to be doing right now. So let us welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Nick.
How are you, sir?
Oh, as always, there's ever so much TV, and it doesn't slow down a bit.
Yes. The first thing I want to mention, while we get some stuff that you reviewed, some things that we need to talk about, some tweets that you put out there that I want to get to as we as we do every couple of weeks when you join us. Have you seen, because I watched the pilot last night, have you seen What We Do in the Shadows on FX?
I have seen two episodes of What We Do in the Shadows on FX.
Okay.
So I am 1 week ahead and will at some point watch a few more. But since my colleague Tim Goodman reviewed it, I was happy to do other things at least for a little while.
Right.
Again, too much TV, Nick.
Yeah. Well, I thought the pilot was brilliant. I mean, I happen to be a huge fan of the movie, obviously. And I thought the first episode, I thought it was brilliant, and I laughed out loud several times, and I couldn't have been happier, because I really adore that film, and I think they did a great job bringing it to television.
I'm glad, and people do seem to love it. I was less enamored, but still did laugh out loud several times, and given the number of comedies out there that I either don't laugh at because they're too cool to be funny, or because they're not funny, that is something. I don't know. I was not as enamored with the characters, and I think I found all of the characters in the movie version to be much more immediately endearing and appealing and sort of distinctive, and sort of I wasn't just as involved with the characters in the TV show. And, you know, I could become as involved with them in a hurry if I watch a couple more episodes. And like I said, I laughed several times, but I know that some people seem to like it a little bit more than I do, which is okay.
Yeah, well, I think I like it a little bit more than you. I thought it was great. And I like the characters very much, and I thought the whole setup was really funny. And I really love the addition of Colin, the energy vampire. That stuff destroyed me.
That is a good innovation. That is absolutely a smart new twist that I give them a lot of credit for. And to me, that's kind of the one that I thought was smart and, you know, innovative and was an improvement over the movie. But definitely, without a question, that is an easily relatable character who all of the dozens of people who watch this show will find that they are experiencing in their own lives with great frequency. So is a smart thing that they did.
The portrayal of him in The Office, I'm telling you, I don't know if I've laughed harder at a bit on TV in a really, really long time. The pencil sharpener thing, I was just in hysterics during that whole thing. I thought it was so funny.
And I don't think I laughed because I think my reaction was, okay, that's true.
Well, yep, I think
we know that person.
I think that's why I laughed as hard as I did, is because of that. But man, it was, so I was very thrilled with it, and I can't wait till next week to see it to see it again. So
I'm definitely looking forward to watching more at some point when I have the time, but so much time.
Okay. So featuring speaking of FX, what a stellar season for Better Things, and it got renewed again.
It did indeed. I don't know that anyone had any reason to be worried about it, and I don't know that we were, but it's, you know, it's not a wildly quote-unquote popular show. It's just a wonderful show, and yeah, this season has been really good. So far, I've been keeping just 1 week ahead, so that is where I am. And yeah, last week's episode was great, and yeah, it's very satisfying and reassuring how the show hasn't really skipped a beat at all.
It hasn't
this season, and it, you know, just goes to affirm how very, very wonderful Pamela Adlon is. And I hope that freed from the associations of Louis C.K. when it comes time to vote for Emmys, that voters can actually take a step back and realize what a spectacular director she is.
Yep.
And I'm going to be angry if she does not get a directing nomination. I
totally agree with you.
I haven't figured out what episode yet, but
yeah,
still.
I totally agree with you. And she's, you know, the direction of the show is beautiful. It takes risks. It's unusual. It's got a very distinctive style. I love the fact that, you know, this relationship that she has, you know, with her brother and her mom, and of course, especially her kids, is so nuanced and so wonderful. It's really funny, but it's also like heartbreaking at times. And I also really love, you know, the behind the scenes Hollywood stuff, like last week's episode about the stunt, you know, the stunt and the way the director was portrayed and the assistant. All of that stuff was gold on the set of the movie.
And that's always something that they've done little bits and pieces of. They've done it more this season, it feels like. Definitely they've had those moments where she's been shooting a commercial or doing voiceover work or whatever. But the having her have a running movie, which apparently has the potential to be a very big movie for
her,
in theory. I think that's a nice thing they've done, and they have some things clearly to say about the way things work on Hollywood sets. So have at it, guys.
And it was it worked really well, because they nailed, I mean, they nailed every sort of, like, you know, idiotic cliche that you could get. And I loved the young actress's mother. I just thought the portrayal of that was really biting and very funny. Everything in that subplot about the making of that movie and the whole stunt gone awry thing, I thought was just brilliant. Yeah,
they are doing well so far this season, and I'm glad that people are being able to see it for its own thing and not getting bogged down in the Louis of it all. So that is important for Pamela Adlon. It's important for FX. It's important for the show. It's probably important for us as a society. It's important on many levels. You know, not that we're supposed to forgive Louis C.K., frankly, and he's made it basically entirely impossible.
Oh,
and
God,
that's
yes.
been his choice.
Yeah.
That's been his choice, and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, too bad, but away with him. Away with him, and all hail Pamela Adlon, who is a queen.
She
so,
is. No question
yay.
About it. No question about it. And since we're on FX, did you finish? Now, last time we talked, you didn't see all of Fosse Verdon. Did you?
No, I have not seen any more there. I've seen two episodes when we last talked, and that is what I've seen, because I had to write the review quickly, and a couple more episodes have been posted for critics. And once again, once the review is written, it's hard to find the time to rush and fill in the back episodes of things. And there are a number of recent shows where I've watched the episodes they sent screeners for, and then at some point I'm going to need to catch up on the rest of it. Fosse Verdon at least hasn't premiered yet, so I've got a while.
Yeah, you do. It premieres on April 9th.
And again,
we talked about it. You know, you reviewed those two episodes that you saw last time you were with us a couple of weeks ago. And again, I am so very excited about it. And with every, you know, trailer that they show, with every ad that they're taking on social media, where they're taking, you know, where they're profiling the actor who is playing, like, or they put up a picture of the actor who's playing, like, Neil Simon, you know, or who's playing Paddy Chayefsky. I just keep getting more excited about the prospect of the show, and I'm just excited about it. That's all.
What can I say? America loves watching semi-fictionalized portrayals of Paddy Chayefsky, and you know, it's going to be huge. And you know, played by multiple Tony winner Norbert Leo Butt. So you know,
yeah, the ratings are going to
be huge.
Ratings are going to go through the roof on that for that. But yeah, I think it's going to be very cool. So all right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, we covered. Clearly, we covered FX, so we got that covered. When we come back, Dan's reviewed a bunch of stuff, and we've got other things to talk about. It's TV. Every couple of weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on The Fine Print. Follow him at Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, more TV talk right after we take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock, as we are every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And there you go. Coming up a little bit later on, we are going to be talking. We have a couple of TV topics that we're going to get to. And then one of my favorite movies of all time was released on this date in 1979. It came out 40 years ago, and that would be the horror film Phantasm, which was a movie that kind of really seminal film for me. And it's hard for me to believe that it's the release date is 40 years ago today. So we're going to talk about things that turned 40 or things that are going to turn 40 here in 2019. So other movies and people and gadgets and things like that. So on the 40th anniversary of Phantasm, we'll also talk a little bit about Phantasm as well. So that's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. It's Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get those requests in. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. But right now, it's TV Talk. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And lots of TV to talk about, and let's get Dan back on the show. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
All right. So earlier in the week, right at the beginning of the week, we covered the Apple's big TV presentation here, and we want to get your thoughts on it. And I know you wrote a piece about it in your Critics Notebook. So tell us a little bit about what you thought the whole deal was.
Well, what I thought the whole deal was, I thought that they were bringing a bunch of people to Cupertino and they were going to actually give details about the many, many ambitious TV projects that they've been working on now for multiple years, and instead they didn't. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know why they threw such a big gala if they weren't going to actually say anything. And I don't feel like I'm asking for too much. Like, on one hand, yes, I would have liked full trailers for several of Apple shows, since several of them have shot a full season. Most of them are deep into production. If you can't put together a 30-second clip reel of your show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon and Steve Carell, I don't quite know what you're doing, but that's a choice. So, okay, let's just say that it was asking for too much to ask for clips. It really isn't asking for too much to get a more tangible premiere than fall for their various new shows.
Right.
And really for them not to even begin to say how much, if at all, this is going to cost and the exact logistics of how people will have access to it. I mean, I get that it's going to be on the TV app and that the TV app is going to be available on Apple products, but also by fall on Roku and other various devices. And that's good to know. But really and truly, you could have just told me that because it's kind of semi-intuitive. It's on the TV app. It's on your phone already. But yeah, other than that, there was no actual information. And there was no tangible brand message on what Apple's original programming strategy is. Like, a bunch of black and white pompous things with a bunch of very, very, very established names talking about how they want to inspire. That's meaningless. And Apple usually, sometimes, often, is better than that. And I guess the way I put it in my Critics Notebook is sometimes Apple changes the game. Sometimes Apple puts out these products and you go, my God, this is something I've never seen before and I need it and it's going to change absolutely everything in the world. And then other times they just do something where it's like, it's a phone, but it's more colorful. Or it's a little box that goes next to your TV. Okay, so it's like a Roku. Yes, but a little bit more expensive and slightly better. This was one of those. This was one of those. We're moving the ball forward a couple inches, but because we're Apple, you're going to think it's awesome. And so I wanted something more tangible and something more exciting. And I was not excited by what Apple announced.
I got to say that I didn't watch the whole thing. I saw clips of it. We talked about it on the show with somebody from CNET, and we covered it that way. But I was really surprised that there was no pricing at all. Like, I mean, they didn't even hint at how much this was going to cost. And I don't understand why you would have this major press conference if you didn't have a lot of those details, especially like how much it's going to cost. People are interested in how much it's going to cost, I think.
And it's not that far off. It's not like you're saying this is going to be a year from now, so we're still working out the logistics and whatever. It's, say, 6 months. It could be less than 6 months. Fall could be September 21st. I don't know. They didn't tell me.
Yeah.
And it's not useful, and especially to do it basically in the second half of a thing where they really did, where they rolled out whatever the Apple News Plus thing was, and they actually did say how much their magazine thing was going to cost.
Right.
You know, $9.99 a month.
Right.
Okay, well, there you go. They had a full chart of how much cash back you were going to get every time you used your new Apple credit card.
Right.
Like, ooh, 3%, 1%, 2%. Ah! And for the TV, they can't give us a, yeah, we're thinking it's probably going to be $5.99 a month with a couple ads and then $9.99 without or something. You know, whatever. But come on.
Yeah.
You know you've called this event. You know that the people watching this event are going to want to actually know if this is going to be another service that they're going to need to pony up $15 a month for, or $9 a month, or whatever. And just to not give that is, it's cocky. It's them saying, look, whatever it is, you're going to pay for it. You've already got the app on your phone. You've already got the app on your thing. You're going to want to watch our Steve Carell, Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston show. So guess what? When it comes out, we'll tell you how much you're paying, and you're going to like it. And that's not the version of Apple that I like.
Yeah.
And I say that as someone who is talking right now on his Apple phone, has his MacBook Pro on his lap, and watched the announcement on his Apple TV on the Apple Events app.
Right.
I mean, I am in for a penny, in for a pound on Apple, and this still annoyed me.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. Okay. So, do you think though, that they're thinking was, look at how many, you know, big guns we have here. How many A-listers, do you think that they thought that was enough? Like bringing out Spielberg and Oprah and, you know, Jennifer Aniston. Do you think that was, they thought, okay, the star power is going to get us through this?
Oh, I think they absolutely thought that was enough. Yeah. And even that doesn't make me particularly happy, because if your only point is, we've brought in a bunch of high-powered artists who honestly could have made these shows anywhere, because anytime these people bring a show out into the marketplace, they have 50 bidders. So was their point that Apple TV is simply going to be capable of outbidding most of the competition, and that's what the ethos is going to be? That's what the brand is going to be? We are going to pay people to bring expensive products here, because that's, you know, a thing. But if their only point is we're bringing in A-list vanity projects, that's not, to me, an incentive. It's not an enticement. It doesn't say, here's how we're being bold. It says we're making another Steven Spielberg-produced version of a show that Steven Spielberg already produced. Mm-hmm. You know, like, great, Amazing Stories, again.
Right.
Fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, I was chagrined, honestly. And the other funny thing is, because I'm not, you know, a tech reporter, I've only sat through bits and pieces of these Apple events before, so this was the first time I'd ever sat through a full 2-hour Apple presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's some exhausting culty stuff.
Yeah. Well, the guy that we talked to from CNET, you know, he's an old pro at sitting through the Apple events and the announcements, and he was, you know, he thought it was, you know, par for the course. So if, even though you've not sat through all of them, I think it's pretty close to what they always provide, you know, people. So it's kind of a butt numbing situation, I would guess.
Well, and just all of the sort of, you know, everyone clapping at every word and all of that. And so my perspective as a reporter is to compare it to the Television Critics Association press tour, where we have a specific reportorial, ethical point that we make to not clap at panels, and we don't clap when there are announcements, and we don't treat the people who we're covering as if they're people who are performing for us. You know, we're just reporting on what they do. And so to watch that presentation and to have a room, which is largely filled with reporters, but also stockholders and all that, clapping on every word is to me, as a professional, a little nauseating.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. We got a lot more TV to talk about here. You can read him in The Hollywood Reporter. He's a TV critic, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV talk with Dan right after we take a break here on WGN. Welcome back. How's everybody doing this morning? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk. We got a pretty funny TV subject that we're going to be jumping into a little bit later on. And plus, it's the 40th anniversary of one of my favorite movies. It was released on this day in 1979. And then we're going to talk about other things that turned 40 this year. And that will make us all feel old. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and Triple Play Thursday request. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, too, at facebook.com/Nick D Show. We are talking TV, as we do every 2 weeks, with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's bring Dan back in. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, so, you know, the last time you were on a couple weeks ago, I got your opinion on the topic that we jumped into after, you know, we let you go, which was shows that were canceled way too soon. And you immediately mentioned Kings, and then you wrote the piece about the 10th anniversary of Kings. Tell us a little bit about the Critics Notebook piece that you wrote.
I really like the timing of that. You could not have scheduled that better for me. So thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. As I said, when you asked me last time, I was in the process of thinking my way around a 10th anniversary piece for NBC's Kings, which listeners should know is actually available to stream on the NBC website. I had at some point thought it wasn't, but it is there. So if you want to experience a very strange, pseudo-biblical, pseudo-science fiction, pseudo-Shakespearean take on the Book of David and the story of David and Goliath and David's rise from peasant to king, etc., you should check out NBC's Kings.
You know, after you know, the morning when I got home after the last visit that you had, I immediately went to the NBC website and I saw it was there. I still haven't watched it, but I will. But you've totally piqued my interest, and I actually went to NBC.com and I just typed in Kings just to see what they had, you know, like, because I wanted to like look at the to try and jar my memory, because it wasn't on very long, obviously, and I was trying to remember it. And then, you know, I thought I would just look through like a gallery or see the, you know, the logo and the posters and stuff, but then I looked and I saw that there were episodes available, and I was like, oh, so.
Remarkable that in this day and age you could actually find a show that you were looking for and that it was available to watch.
Yeah.
It is somewhat impressive. It's a really good show, and I rewatched only the first 4 hours because, as I may have mentioned, a lot of TV. And it holds up amazingly well. It is a very particular kind of show, because I described the premise for you, and that's the kind of premise that lots of people would probably handle with at least a little bit of a wink and a nudge. It is entirely sincere, entirely earnest, very high-minded. The characters speak in these soliloquies that really are, again, Shakespearean. They use a kind of antiquated speech patterns. Everyone, they talk uniquely on that show. Michael Green created it, and he had a big year a couple years ago. He wrote, like, 5 of the biggest movies of the year, including Logan and Blade Runner 2049, etc. So he had a big year 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And this was basically the first show he created. And it's just a unique show. And it might not be a unique show that everyone is going to find resonates with them, because, again, it failed fast and hard. It aired a couple times on Friday night, got shipped off to Saturday night. It did air its full run on NBC. It didn't get pulled before it ended, which is something in this day and age.
Mm.
But I understand why it wasn't successful, and the thesis of my article was just how impressive it was that it got made at all, and how there's no chance that a broadcast network would do anything comparable today. I didn't claim in the article that it was the last ambitious show on broadcast network TV, because that's certainly not true. But having watched every drama that's aired on broadcast TV in the last 2 or 3 years, there is a distinct lack of ambition. And looking at the pilots for next season, just looking at their log lines, haven't seen anything.
Mm-hmm.
It feels as if that's continuing. It's just not the market that the networks are in these days. And so looking back at a really good, really solid show like Kings, it makes me happy because it's a good show and I'm glad it existed, but it makes me sad because nobody would give that show that budget, get those stars, Ian McShane, bunches of wonderful supporting actors, just an amazing supporting actor cast. You look at the character actors who pop up. It's like Dylan Baker, Brian Cox, Wes Studi, Eamon Walker, amazing supporting cast. Macaulay Culkin should have had a full career comeback on the basis of his brief role on the show. And instead it was too challenging, and that's the lesson that probably networks took from it. And so, happy but sad.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Ian McShane, I can speak for myself and all of my friends and all of the people that are on my social media. When the Deadwood trailer dropped, we all went nuts. And so what's the buzz on that? Is there any sort of early buzz or anything on it?
The early buzz is that people at HBO say it's really good. So there's the buzz. I'm sort of going through in my mind who I had talked to about it. I think I've talked to at least one colleague who might have read an early version of the script and felt like it felt Deadwood-y, but heaven knows the trailer felt right. So that's all you can possibly want is to look at a trailer like that and go, okay, it doesn't look like they're bending over backwards too much. It looks and feels natural. So bring it on. Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it and hoping desperately that they don't screw it up.
Yeah,
because it's just too easy to screw something like that up. And Deadwood, you know, even if it didn't end on its own terms, which of course it didn't, and even if it didn't end in a way that felt like it was a satisfactory resting place, and it really didn't, it still was three great seasons of TV, pure and simple. Mm-hmm. And it would be very sad if the capper they decided to put on it was in any way disappointing. So I feel hopeful, but very, very, very concerned also.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, I'm curious about the whole project itself, you know, to see how it's going to wrap everything up and all that stuff. But I'm also really curious as to how they're going to handle Powers Booth's character.
I mean, I think the answer to that is that I assume they will give recognition to the character's existence and use that as a way to pay homage to Powers Booth.
Yeah.
But it's a show with such a vast universe that they didn't need that character. Mm-hmm. You know, there were other characters who could do comparable things, and if they didn't, you know, that they obviously knew that they only had availability of people for so much time, and so they had to work around that to begin with. But you know, you saw from the trailer, it looks like Hurst is there, and yeah. So there are plenty of adversarial characters who are as good. So I will be curious to see how they acknowledge him, and I assume that they will. But also, it's a big enough universe that it's going to be hard to service all of those people and all of those characters in 2 hours.
Sure.
So,
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and speaking of HBO, have you seen any of season 2 of Barry, which debuts on Sunday?
I have indeed, and this would be a sneak peek because my review will not come out until Friday.
Awesome.
I haven't written it yet. the basic sneak peek I will give you is it's very, very close to a drama in season 2.
Okay.
And that is my tease.
Hader was on Kimmel the other night, and he said that Kimmel was like, "What can you tell us about season 2?" And he's like, "It's actually even more dark." He said it's even darker than the first season. And I was like, "Oh boy."
Yeah. You know, it is absolutely and completely, that would be how I would describe it. It is a show that has, I would say, come very close to shifting genres entirely, because where the show ended up at the end of the first season, either they were going to have to ignore a bunch of things and just kind of do a cold reset that wouldn't be satisfying, or if they were dealing with the consequences of what happened in the finale, it was going to be hard to be immediately humorous about it.
And so, that's right, yeah.
And so that's the way they went. And I think that if you look at the organic shift of the show through the first season, it was getting darker and more serious consistently through to the end. So if you know going in, it's really not that funny.
Yeah.
Like, I think I probably laughed once or twice over the first three episodes, honestly.
Yeah.
But several different times I found myself going, okay, this is really gutsy what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I applaud the gutsiness. But yeah, it's not funny because it's largely not a comedy. On the other hand, the first three episodes of the season of Veep are hilarious.
Oh, good, 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 good. I'm so.
And it has not become a drama.
Okay, good, good. And I'm so. I was going to ask you about Veep going right out of that, but I'm glad you told me that because. And I'm sad that that show's coming to an end. I got to say, I really am. So, yeah.
I think if you watch these episodes, and again, I've only seen three, but it's a short season. It's only seven episodes,
right.
I think.
Right.
I think you see an awareness. There's only so far that on that show, there's only so far they can go.
Yeah.
And that they've pushed that show about as far as the premise goes. Plus the real world has pushed insanity to such an extreme place.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Dan, hang on. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. You can read him at The Hollywood Reporter, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right. We got to take a break for the news here. When we come back, more TV talk with Dan Feinberg right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Tom Hush, you on a Clash kick this morning? not a bad kick to be on. Because the Clash, you know, they rule. Tom is my producer. He's doing the music here. And speaking of music, it's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your request in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. We got a funny TV topic that we're going to get to after we finish talking with Dan Feinberg here. And then it's the 40th anniversary of the release of the film Phantasm, which was a seminal movie for me. One of my favorite horror movies of all time. We'll talk about that and things that actually turn 40 this year. So we can all feel old. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he's here to talk about TV. And welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Okay, I am really, really curious about this. It looks really fantastic and strange, and it's Hulu's new show, The Act, with Patricia Arquette, who is now become, is Patricia Arquette become like the chameleon character actress now? Is that what's going on?
She really has, and it's so fun, and it's so, you know, it is not the arc that you would have expected for her back, you know, with True Romance
right.
in the mid-90s, you would not have thought this was the way she was going, but it shouldn't be surprising how good she is. As I said in my review, she won an Oscar. She won an Emmy for Medium, for heaven's sakes,
yeah.
which is kind of also hilarious to me, the idea that there was a period as recently as 14 years ago when a network show like Medium could actually win drama Emmys still. I mean...
Yeah.
You want to talk about a time capsule.
Right.
Wow, you know. Yeah. But yes, she is great. The first and most notable thing from an awards perspective, because that's clearly what art is all about, is that she is almost certainly a supporting actress in this. And that will mean that she will not need to go head-to-head with herself in Escape at Dannemora,
mm-hmm.
where she is a lead actress and certain to be nominated. I assume that she will also be nominated for Emmys and whatnot for this as supporting, because the star is Joey King, and I have liked Joey King in many things before. She was wonderful in the first season of Fargo, but this is probably her first real full grown up I'm an actress performance, and she's terrific. For people who don't know, this is based on a BuzzFeed article, but it was also then an HBO documentary, and back in January, a Lifetime telefilm starring Marcia Gay Harden about a mother and daughter, and the daughter seems to have a wide variety of medical ailments, but maybe not, and so brings in Munchausen's by proxy syndrome and a bunch of things, and it's kind of half a demented fairy tale, half whatever happened to Baby Jane, I've also, though, seen that the mother-daughter relationship compared to Carrie, and definitely there are aspects of a horror story to this. It's really tough to watch in places and unpleasant because the relationship between these two characters is so parasitic and toxic, and yet in moments they think it's a beautiful and lovely relationship. It's a strange show, and at times it's really quite wonderful because the two actresses are so very good. And so, yeah, it's not the easiest show to watch, but I think it's very rewarding. I've seen 5 episodes, and I think it's an 8-episode season, and the act is going to apparently be a true crime anthology of some sort going forward. So, yeah, it's good and worth checking out, and even if you know the story from all of its other different tellings, the pace at which it goes in this miniseries form, it's entirely different from the way it could ever be told in a 100-minute documentary or a 90-minute Lifetime movie.
Yeah, well, it's just such a crazy story. I mean, really crazy. I mean, there's a reason why it's been told so many times, so many different times, because it's just so fascinating. And if this were, you wouldn't think this was a true story unless somebody told you it was. You know, it's just so crazy.
It is very crazy and very twisted. And at least the part I've watched so far, it doesn't necessarily over-explain or over-diagnose it. It kind of does throw out the basic information that you need, but it leaves a lot of questions, and it leaves a lot of questions about the shifting power dynamics between the two of them and the choices they're both making and why they're making the choices. It's very provocative and interesting to watch, and it feels at sometimes like it might be going a little bit slower than you expect, and you start going, okay, well, maybe this could have just been a movie, but then they actually have time to do things that flesh out the characters and flesh out the emotions in ways that you really couldn't do in a shorter telling of the story.
Yeah. Now, is Hulu rolling this out like they did Handmaid's Tale? Is it a weekly rollout?
I am not sure. I had initially thought that it was all at once, and then I thought I heard something different, and now I don't know anymore. Now it's a total mystery. not to everyone. I mean, all one would have to do is go to Hulu and see how much is there.
Right,
it's just a mystery to me.
Yeah. Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. It's such a crazy story, and I'm a big fan of both those actresses. So that one looks pretty great to me. Okay. All right. So we've talked about this before, about how This Is Us has been one of the more influential shows in terms of now every network wants to have a show that people are going to cry when they watch. You've got A Million Little Things now on ABC. And now NBC is trying to top themselves with The Village. Is that what's going on, Dan?
It's a fundamental misunderstanding is what it is. And it's the fundamental misunderstanding that broadcast networks always make. They look at anything that's successful, and they go, okay, well, how do we imitate this, and what is the core of it? And so you take something like Lost, and the ABC looked and said, okay, what are people enjoying? Okay, what they like is mysteries that are twisty that they know they may never get the answer to. That's what people watch that show for. As opposed to people watching the show because you watch the pilot of that show, there's almost no mystery. There's a bunch of really fantastic characters in an amazing setting and situation. That's what got people hooked. The mystery people got involved in, but whatever. So similarly with This Is Us, it's a wonderfully acted family show that then got confused by its own identity and is now frustrating for me as much as anything. But basically what people decided was America wants to cry.
Right.
And the Village is nothing but that. It's an ensemble set at a Brooklyn apartment complex. And basically there's not a scene that goes by without somebody getting watery about the eyes. The second episode, there's a character played by Michaela McManus, who people will know from Law and Order SVU and One Tree Hill and a few other things. There are four or five individual scenes in which she is crying in the second episode.
Oh, man.
And she's crying about different things in at least two or three of the scenes. It's abusive, and it's not good storytelling because it has no tonal variation. But if the reason why you watch This Is Us is because you like to cry and because you need that emotional release, well, The Village is going to give you that. That's what it's there for. But man, if you like any subtlety in your emotions, this is not the show for you. As someone on Twitter incredulously said after my review, wait, they give the one-legged soldier a three-legged dog? !
No.
And indeed, there is a one-legged soldier
No.
who is given a three-legged dog.
Oh my
and
God.
They hug.
Oh my God. That's unbelievable.
It is not subtle, and it is not good, but I also completely understand that people seeing a one-legged soldier hugging his three-legged dog, it will make people cry. And if you are satisfied by that emotional response, and I can tell you are going to be satisfied, then The Village is a show for you.
Oh my God. Wow. Man, Shameless. That's amazing.
Oh, utterly.
That's amazing. So what are you working on? I know you said you were going to write your review of Barry. What else have you seen that you're working on? What's coming up?
Ooh, since I'm not actually reviewing it, I can tease that I've seen two episodes of Twilight Zone now.
Oh.
So
ooh.
This isn't even a preview because Tim is writing the review, so I'm not going to get the chance to review it anywhere. So
yeah.
Here, I've seen the first two episodes, which I believe are the first two episodes that are premiering on CBS All Access on April 1st.
Right.
The first of them is The Comedian, which stars Kumail Nanjiani, and the second one is... it's an airplane set one 30,000 feet or something.
Yeah.
And it stars Adam Scott.
Yeah.
And they're both original stories, so whatever. The Comedian is wildly too long, and that is my immediate response. It's 55 minutes, and the thing I enjoy most about Twilight Zone is the artful simplicity of it.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of this how limited and brief those episodes are because they tell these contained stories in which there's no fat in a perfect version.
Right.
And this episode has a lot of fat.
Okay.
I think you could have cut it down to 30 minutes with zero problems. And the second episode is 36 minutes, so it's getting things much closer to on track.
Right.
But there are some interesting ideas in The Comedian. I don't know that it freaked me out in any particular way, but it's got a concept. You see what the theme is.
Okay.
It's there. The Adam Scott episode is more viscerally effective. Part of that is that I guess apparently I respond intense ways to airplane set thrillers.
Yeah.
And so this is one of those. It's a lot like what was the Liam Neeson movie a couple of years ago on a plane, whatever it was?
Nonstop? No. No, that was on one on the train. Yeah, Nonstop.
No, yeah, Nonstop. Yeah,
yeah, Nonstop.
That is correct.
Because I'm getting me confused now with the one where he's on the train. The commuter.
Which was the commuter.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I can do. And they're all sort of variations on Bunny Lake is Missing. And this is, well, I mean, the other ones are. This is not, but it's just one of those paranoid, they're on a plane.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyone who flies with any regularity already gets a little bit tense about things
right.
set on planes. And
right.
so seeing people get nervous on planes and seeing people dealing with air marshals and flight attendants and turbulence and all of that, it's a good way to get a certain amount of sweat on your palms. And
yeah.
so that one had a more of a visceral effect, but I don't know that its themes were as strong. So both are interesting. Neither one is a slam dunk, but both are interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the exclusive preview, Dan. I appreciate that.
That's what I'm here for.
Okay.
You gave me the opportunity, so I was happy to provide it.
Very cool. All right. Dan Feinberg, we will talk to you in a couple of weeks, and it's always a pleasure. Take care.
Looking forward to it, Nick.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Dan Feinberg, critic for TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, and Triple Play Thursday is going to kick off after the 2:30 news, so get your requests in now. You ever hear Triple Play Thursday? That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for your Triple Play Thursday requests, so that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. We're also going to talk, we got a couple of funny topics related to TV and movies. The first was of which is 20 on-screen relationships that never should have existed. There's no way that these two people would be either a couple or friends or whatever. It's just relationships that and these are both in TV and in movies. We'll talk a little bit about that and have some fun with that. And today, March 28th marks the 40th anniversary of the release of Phantasm, one of my very favorite movies of all time, a seminal movie of my teenage years. A movie that I saw over 100 times in the theater, particularly in the summer of 1979, and have gone on to watch it millions of other times. And I've actually become friends with writer-director Don Coscarelli and the rest of the cast. And that's kind of like crazy and a dream come true. But I thought we would talk about Phantasm on its 40th anniversary of its release. And then we'll talk about things that are turning 40 this year as well. Other movies that that have their anniversary, the 40th anniversary this year, and people who are turning 40 this year, and other things like products and gadgets and things like that. So we are going to celebrate the 40th anniversary of a lot of things, including Phantasm. So that's coming up. Anytime you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And I want to mention right now, I'll take the opportunity to mention my next film club event, and I hope people can come on. I love hosting these film club events, and we've got a lot of people who come out every month, and we've got a classic this month, this coming April. It'll be April 9th. It'll be Tuesday, April 9th, and we are showing Alfred Hitchcock's great thriller, The Man Who Knew Too Much, with Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day, one of the quintessential classic Hitchcock thrillers with a great performance by Jimmy Stewart. It's a true classic, and seeing it on the big screen is kind of a rare thing, so I'm very excited to present it, and I hope that you guys can make it. It is the innocent man falsely accused, getting an innocent man getting caught up in into all kinds of crazy thrilling plots. And it's a terrific movie. So I hope you guys can come out. Again, it's on Tuesday, April 9th. The movie starts at 8 o'clock, and all of my film club events take place at the AMC Rosemont 18, which used to be the Movie Co. Theater. It's really easy to get to. It's right off the expressway. If you don't want to drive, you can just take the blue line, get off at Rosemont. It's a 5-minute walk from the Rosemont stop. And it's a really great theater. We have a giant screen, beautiful love seats that you can sit in, and incredible digital projection, incredible sound. It's going to look great. It's going to be so great to see this classic 1956 Hitchcock thriller on the big screen the way it's meant to be seen. And so we're going to have a good time doing that. So I hope you guys can make it out. Again, tickets are only $10, and that includes parking. Parking is absolutely free. So it's cheap. And it's a classic movie, and it's one of the best. And it's Jimmy Stewart, and it's Alfred Hitchcock. You got to come out. So $10 parking is free. Go to amctheaters.com right now. Tickets are on sale. And reserve your seats right now. amctheaters.com. And, look for the screening of The Man Who Knew Too Much over at the AMC Rosemont 18. Go to the seating chart. Pick out the seats that you want. They will be waiting for you on Tuesday, April 9th. And again, the movie starts at 8. I will introduce it, and then afterwards we have a fun little talk. I'll give you some stories about the making of the movie and some trivia. We'll do a Q&A and talk about Hitchcock and talk about the movie and all that cool stuff. And also, we've partnered up with Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is right down the street at the Crown Plaza Hotel. And it's the Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant. It's a fantastic place, beautiful atmosphere, filled with great Bill Murray memorabilia. It's a great bar, and the menu is fantastic, and the food is great. And they've been kind enough for the past few months to have our viewers come in, our film clubbers come in, have some dinner before the movie and say, hey, I'm a film clubber. I'm going to see and give them proof or your ticket stub that you're going to see The Man Who Knew Too Much. And you get 15% off all of your food, which is a great deal. And the food's fantastic and the atmosphere is great. It's a really, really fun place. And, you know, the people that work there are great. The staff is great and the management is great. And they've been really, really kind to us. And we're loving our partnership with those guys. So get there a little bit early. Go to Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, have some great food, get your 15% off discount, and then head over to the theater, which is like 2 seconds away. And you can see Alfred Hitchcock's classic Man Who Knew Too Much. And speaking of Alfred Hitchcock, in May, we are showing another Alfred Hitchcock classic. We're showing North by Northwest with Cary Grant, which is one of the most entertaining, flat-out entertaining Alfred Hitchcock movies ever made. And again, that deal with Caddyshack remains. So for all of the movies. So get to Caddyshack, you know, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, have some great food, 15% off that food, and then at 8 o'clock, we'll all watch The Man Who Knew Too Much. It is a classic, classic movie that you rarely get to see on the big screen, and it's Alfred Hitchcock and it's Jimmy Stewart, and you gotta go. So it's Tuesday, April 9th, AMC Rosemont 18, starts at 8 o'clock, $10, parking is free, so get your tickets right now at amctheaters.com, and I hope to see everybody out on Tuesday, April 9th to see The Man Who Knew Too Much. So amctheaters.com, get your tickets now. We'll take a break. The news is up after this. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, and we're starting off good here because I enjoy Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah!
312-981-7200, one artist, three songs. Who was smart enough to want to hear some Hendrix?
That was our good friend Trucker Rich.
Trucker Rich. All right. That's a good way to kick off Triple Play Thursday. Little Hendrix. Two more of those we're going to hear this morning. Okay. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Coming up later on, we're going to talk about then celebrate. Today marks the 40th anniversary of the release of Phantasm. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about things that turn 40 this year, like people and movies and products and all that cool stuff. So we're going to feel really old in a little while. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. But right now I want to talk about this. I've got this article, this really fun thing that that Cracked put together, Cracked.com, which is a really fun and terrific website. They do great work there. And it's crazy because, you know, I'm older than you, much older than you, Tom. And so you probably don't remember Cracked magazine.
No, I've only known it as the website.
Okay, so Cracked Magazine was a, you know what Mad Magazine is, I would assume.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so Cracked Magazine, back like in the late 60s and in the 70s, was like a knockoff of Mad Magazine. It wasn't as good, it was like the cheap sort of knockoff of Mad Magazine, and it was Cracked Magazine. And they tried to do the same kind of stuff. You know, the parodies and the crazy artwork and all that stuff. And it had, you know, it tried to have the same sensibility, but it was always like, you know, it was always like this, like if you had Mad because Mad was great. Mad Magazine is one of the greatest things that's ever been in the world. And then Cracked, you would get and read it and be disappointed. If you, you know, like I was a kid, I'd read Cracked and I'd be like, that's so not Mad.
It's like during back to school season, you wanted the Crayola crayons, but they got you Rose Art instead.
Yeah, yeah. Or you get some sort of generic version of something. Right. You know what I mean? You know, like you know, instead of instead of Coke, you get cola. You know what? You know what I'm talking about? So that was Cracked was sort of the cola of the Mad Magazine world. And then when the website started up, it's got the same logo as the magazine, and it obviously, I think it came from the same, you know, it was spawned from the same company, but they don't do anything at all like that anymore. Now it's strictly a very funny entertainment website that has absolutely nothing to do with the magazine, and people who are old enough to remember it might think, why would I want to go to Cracked.com when I can just go to Mad Magazine? Because Cracked is a completely different thing now. It is completely removed from whatever Cracked Magazine was in the 70s. It's gone. So they put together some really entertaining sort of like commentary and articles and lists and stuff. So this one that caught my eye, I think, is really funny. It's 20 on-screen relationships that should have never existed. So if you guys think about it, in TV and in movies, what couples or what friendships or what relationships were the worst? Like the worst mismatched, the couples that just don't make any sense, the friendships that are crazy and would never exist in real life, and there's no business for these two characters to be together. So bad relationships in movies and TV, which ones are like, there's no way that these two people, this is the worst coupling I've ever seen in a TV or in a TV show or a movie. 312-981-7200. I've got two that involve Dolly Parton right off the bat. Rhinestone. Do you know the movie? Are you familiar with the movie Rhinestone?
No.
Rhinestone is a sort of musical comedy that takes place like in the world of country music, and it stars Dolly Parton, which makes sense. You make a musical comedy that takes place in the sort of the country music world. You can't get much better than Dolly Parton, and her romantic interest, and who also sings country songs in the movie. Her romantic interest, Sylvester Stallone. So it's Sylvester Stallone and Dolly Parton in a terrible movie called Rhinestoning, and so I call that Rhinestoning. I guess I've never told you these theories that I have.
Okay.
When you rhinestone a movie, that's when you're talking about a movie that has a couple that should never be together, like the worst match, the worst couple match of all time. So Sylvester Stallone paired up with Dolly Parton is ridiculous.
I can't even imagine what that would sound like.
Well, you should just continue to imagine and not watch the movie, because it is a terrible movie. Even though one of my favorite actors is, and Ron Liebman's in it, and I love him.
Yeah.
But no.
No.
So that's not a good pairing. And there's another one with Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton was in a movie called Straight Talk, which was filmed here in Chicago and is actually about talk radio. Also, not accurate. Let me just say that right now.
Oh, no.
Not accurate about talk radio at all. But her romantic interest in that one, are you ready for this one?
Okay.
Would be James Woods.
Oh,
so it's okay. James Woods and Dolly Parton. So though, that's what I call rhinestoning. Now, do you know what I call here's what I call nighthawking. When I nighthawk a movie, you know what nighthawk? I'll explain to you what you know. The movie Nighthawks.
Yeah, that's also
another
Sly.
Stallone.
Yeah.
It's Stallone movie. Billy Dee Williams, Rutger Hauer's breakout performance.
True.
Okay, when I was like 16, that movie came out. I thought it was the greatest movie ever made. I loved it. I thought it was the coolest movie of all time. I saw it a ton of times in the theater. Went to the Norwich, saw it like 5-6 times when it came on cable. You know, I watched it. And then years go by. Okay? Years go by. 20-something years, probably. And it shows up on cable. And I'm like, oh, man, Nighthawks. Awesome. Turn it on, and I realize it's a piece of crap. So I call that nighthawking. Nighthawking a movie means that you used to love it, and you went back and watched it, and you realize it's terrible. So that's when you nighthawk a movie.
So okay. Yeah.
So,
I can see that.
So these three things are all named after Stallone movies, because you know when you're rhinestoning a movie, rhinestoning a movie, it's a terrible couple. When you're nighthawking a movie, it's a movie you used to love, but then you will go back and watch it again, and it's terrible. But Ramboing a movie, on the other hand, is the opposite. That's when you go back and watch a movie that you hated, and now you love it. Because when I first saw Rambo, I hated it. And then I went back and I watched it some years later, and now I think it's fantastic.
That's how I feel about First Blood Part 2.
That's what I'm saying.
I was like, this is so dumb. That's and then what, I went back and I'm like, George Cosmatos is a genius.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Rambo.
Yeah.
I'm talking about that one.
So good.
And But I thought it was terrible the first time I saw it.
Really?
And one of the reasons why, the first time I saw it, one of the reasons why I hated it was because I think First Blood is a legitimately great movie. Like, not great, over-the-top, crazy crap like Rambo and a lot of the other stuff that Stallone makes. I think First Blood is I think it's the best movie Stallone's ever made, and I think it's the best performance he's ever given. A very close second is Copland. But he's great in that movie.
And, oh, that's amazing.
And it is a great movie. Like, legitimately good. Not like campy, let's watch Stallone, you know, blow people apart and stuff. Like, you cared about that character.
Yeah, and it's like a serious comment on the post-Vietnam
Absolutely.
America. Like, it's very straightforward.
Absolutely.
And there's big moments.
Yeah.
Like, when he shoots a dude out of the helicopter with a bow and arrow. Yeah. But, like, it I don't know. It really affected me at the end.
Oh, me too. Now, have you ever seen the original cut where he dies?
Yeah, I got to see one of the DVDs I have of it has it as like a special feature. It's like, here's the alternate.
Now, it should have, you know, but the thing was that they shot that ending where Rambo dies, and I've seen it, and it's really sad and really effective, very, very effective. But because Stallone was so hot at that time, the studio went, film an ending where he lives, because, you know, your last Rocky movie made this much, and I know you got another Rocky movie coming out. Maybe we can turn this into a franchise, and that's what they did. Because in the book, he dies.
Yes. You know?
And so, but anyway, one of the reasons I had such a negative reaction to Rambo First Blood Part 2 was because I was like, what is this? You know what I mean? Because First Blood, like I said, very serious, beautiful, great movie. And then I was like so negative on Rambo. I was like, oh God, man, this is ridiculous. I went back like 10, 11 years later, and I was like, okay, this movie rules. And it does. It rules. There's no question about it.
But it is like such a different style.
Oh, completely.
Like, yeah. George Cosmatos goes in there. He's just like, yeah, how can we do this bigger? How can we just shoot legitimately great action scenes?
The problem is he also directed Cobra. And I love George Cosmatos. I love a lot of his movies. I really do. I
think he quote unquote directed Tombstone.
Yeah. And he also, and some of the other ones that he actually legitimately directed. You ever see Of Unknown Origin?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's really great.
Giant Peter Weller and a giant rat. That's all you need in life. and he did Leviathan, right?
Because I want to say yes.
Because Deep Space, or one of the, there were two underwater science fiction movies that came out. I think it was Deep Space Six. Was that what it was? And then there was Leviathan.
Yeah, Leviathan is definitely George Cosmatos.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So, and he died. George Cosmatos died at a young age.
He did.
Yeah.
And, but his son is amazing.
Yeah.
Thanos.
Yep.
Amazing
filmmaker. Yeah. He's made some weird movies, man.
I'm big into Mandy.
Yeah,
big into,
Mandy's great.
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Yeah, yeah. Mandy is great. It's, you know... Boy, I thought that movie was pretty great. So anyway, so those are terms, you know, for those things. But we're talking about rhinestoning right now, essentially. It's movies and TV shows where the on-screen couples should not be together. It's the most ridiculous pairing. Or if it's a friendship, these two people would never, ever be friends. And this was a really terrible decision to put these two actors or these two actors and actresses together. And it doesn't work. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You know, the characters, they shouldn't be together. And here's what they say here on the Cracked article. It says, we all enjoy a good love story. These relationships provide a slightly happy feeling in the cold rock where our hearts should be. But naturally, those cold rocks aren't there without cause. Because when you take a closer look at some of pop culture's most famous relationships, none of them make any damn sense at all. So let's do the first one before we break, and I want to jump in with you guys. Relationships that should never have happened that don't work, that are weird in movies and TV, and a weird pairing of actors and actresses. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's the first one. Thor and Jane in the Thor movie. So this would be Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman.
Mm-hmm.
So the reasons are here. Here's what they say. His lifespan is thousands of years, and hers it might be 100. He's a prima donna space god. She's down to earth. He's a prima donna. I like that they're describing Thor as a prima donna. She's an academic genius. He smashes stuff with a hammer. His dad called her a goat. She gets his mother killed. So they should not be together, but they do both have great hair. Not anymore. Thor doesn't have, not anymore. It's gone. So anyway, that's an example right there. Those two characters, that relationship would not work.
I got a feeling that Natalie Portman is going to pop up again on this list.
You think so?
Oh, I know where it's going to be too.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't pop up, you let us know.
Okay.
All right. We want to hear from you guys here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Actors, you know, we'll open it up a little bit. Actors and actresses who should never be paired up, and characters in movies where the relationship would never, ever work. 312-981-7200 here on WGN.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
said a joker to the thief. Yeah. So this is one of those cases where the cover is actually better than the original, because this is better than Dylan's version, and Dylan even says that. So, Triple Play Thursday continues. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! And that is Hendrix, Trucker Rich, requesting that. It's, you want to get your requests in? It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we're back here. It's Nick DiGilio, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We got some texts coming in. We've been talking about on-screen, both TV and movie relationships that never, ever, ever would work or should have existed. And then also we're kind of opening up a little bit more to, like, actors and actresses who were badly paired. 312-981-7200. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Nick. Yes, the pairing of Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford in The Way We Were was probably one of the most improbable and unbelievable pairings at all possible. I blogged about this a couple of years ago, and I had 25 people writing in to me saying, yes, you're right. And most of them were women.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess that's a good point. The way we were, actually, you know, people love that movie. Maybe it's an unlikely pairing, Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford, but people really love that movie. I'm not one of them. But yeah, I can understand why you blogged about that, and I can understand why women were jealous over Barbara Streisand, which is probably why you got those negative responses, because they were jealous because of Robert Redford. All right, Tom, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200. Let me get to a couple of texts here. 219 error code, Burt Reynolds with Monica on Friends. What? I've never seen a full episode of Friends. I've seen one full episode of Friends because we were stuck on the tarmac at LaGuardia. in the plane, and they popped a video in of, that's the only time I've ever seen it. Now, I see it on the screen every night here, because it's on Channel 9, mm-hmm. and it's on WGN,
yeah,
like,
reruns.
At least three times during the course of the 5 hours, 5-6 hours that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it, you know, I see it visually. Now, Burt Reynolds was on Friends?
Yeah, I'm also not a Friends person.
Now, and Monica is Courtney Cox, right?
Yes, correct. I think there was an episode or two where she's like dating a guy played by Burt Reynolds. And it's like this whole thing that he's an older man.
Well, I know that Tom Selleck was someone that she dated on the show. She dated Tom Selleck.
I thought Tom Selleck was her dad.
No. She dated Tom Selleck. Yeah, no, she did. I think this listener is getting Burt Reynolds and Tom Selleck confused, because they both have fantastic mustaches and they're both much older than Courtney Cox. But I know for a fact that Tom Selleck, because I see it here in the studio, and I've seen several episodes where she's like in bed with Tom Selleck, and you know, so. But I don't know. But if she had Burt Reynolds too, that's pretty weird. 630 error code says the King of Queens show. The only thing about good thing about it is Jerry Stiller. Oh, so like, how did Kevin James get Leah Remini? That's kind of a universal thing about sitcoms, and that goes all the way back to The Honeymooners. Like, how the hell did Ralph Cramden get Alice? How? and then Jim Belushi on that.
Oh, damn, according to Jim.
According to Jim, how does he get Courtney Thorne Smith? How does that happen?
I don't know.
You know, I would even say Ray Romano, Patricia Heaton.
Yeah, but at least Ray had a sense of humor.
Yeah, but you know, there was a time, and I don't think I told you this story. Mm. It was a time when I first moved in with my girlfriend, who became my wife. I moved in with her, and she didn't have cable, which is insane for me with the amount of television that I consume. There's no possible way that I could live without cable and streaming and all that stuff. But back then, we didn't have streaming. So I lived for about a month without cable, like when I first moved in. And then finally I was like, I can't do this anymore. We have to get cable. And, you know, I'll pay for the whole thing every month if you don't want to split it up. So we ended up getting cable. But during that month where we didn't have cable and I only had the very small options, I became fascinated with According to Jim, which was shown, I think it was Channel 9, twice, like back to back.
Yeah.
Every day, every weekday. So I became kind of obsessed with it, and I watched it all the time. And the reason why is because it is without question the worst television show that I have ever seen in my life. I mean, it's by far the worst TV show. I think the worst TV show in the history of the media. And I would watch it every day because I would be hypnotized by its sheer awfulness. Like I said, I'd be sitting in front of the TV, and there wasn't a lot to choose from because there was no cable. So I'm watching this, and I started watching it kind of every day because I was fascinated by just how unbelievably awful it was. And I would just sit there and watch it and like shake my head and go, who watches this? Who voluntarily watches this show? And it was on for like 7 seasons or something.
Oh, forever.
And I would watch it and just sit on the couch and go, how did this show get on the air? How is this crap that I'm watching? How did they give it the okay to put this garbage on the air? It's the worst thing I've ever seen. My wife would come home and she's like, why are you watching According to Jim again? I'm like, I can't turn it off because I am mesmerized and hypnotized by its sheer crappiness. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. And, everything about it was awful. Everything, the writing, the cast, everything. And it was just the worst possible recycled, awful sitcom cliches that have been done a million times and a million times better. And this is the worst possible example of a crappy sitcom in the history of television. And I couldn't stop watching it. And then finally, my wife is like, yeah, let's get cable so you don't watch this garbage. Because I couldn't turn it off. I'd be like, I can't. It was like watching a train wreck. It was like absolutely watching a train wreck. Mm-hmm. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen because it was so awful. And that's another example of there's no way that Courtney Thorne Smith would be with Jim Belushi.
Not a chance.
And then finally, Katherine Heigl and Seth Rogen in Knocked Up.
I can't agree with this more.
I agree with it. But that's kind of the point.
Right.
It's kind of the point of the movie.
It's the comedy of the movie,
right,
that they're not,
it's like,
supposed
what,
to be
what
together.
The hell is she doing with this guy? But to be fair, when they hooked up, they were both annihilated. They were both blasted. So that's the excuse,
Right.
And so the excuse is that, like, there's no possible way that this babe would be with Seth Rogen. Now, the new movie that's coming out with him and Charlize Theron.
Oh, yeah.
Where they play romantic interest. They play leads. They play the romantic leads. And Eric Childress saw it and said it was really good.
Yeah, a lot of positive reactions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you can do that formula and make it work.
Here's one, a quick one, in the same, Apatow world. Here's what they say on Cracked. In 2007's Superbad, Jules, played by the lovely Emma Stone, is popular, social, stylish, and then Seth, played by Jonah Hill, speaking of Knocked Up, on the other hand, is a cantankerous, uncool idiot who's hard to be around. And, of course, in this film of nerd wish fulfillment, she's busy working hard to convince him that she is interested in him. So there's another Apatow-generated, not likely that these two would be together. So, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about relationships that would never, ever happen or shouldn't have ever happened in the movies, and casting of people that shouldn't be cast together. 312-981-7200. We'll jump back into it after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we're here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday.
Hey, man, Triple Play Thursday.
Get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's the last of the Triple Play for Hendrix. So we'll get a brand new Triple Play coming up in just a little bit when we break again. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We were talking about relationships in TV and movies that had no business of being working, that would never, ever work, and didn't work in the movie. And we're giving you examples in TV and movies about how there was no way that these relationships would ever really happen or really work. And also stretching out the topic a little bit more to like two actors or actresses who should never have worked together. Weird pairings. And here's John on WGN. Go ahead, John.
Yes. On NYPD Blue, Sipowicz's second wife, Sylvia, was way too hot for him. And then she gets killed. And he has a third wife, Connie, who's even hotter. It's like the older and fatter he got, the hotter his wives got.
Good for Dennis Franz. Good for him. That's hilarious. Okay, thanks, John.
Thanks.
Okay. The older and fatter he got, the hotter his wives got.
It's like a mirror of my life. I have something in common with his character, and I love that caller because I sweat when I eat, just like Sipowicz did.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
One of my favorite Homer Simpson quotes, and there are many. There was an episode where they were going out to dinner at like a fancy restaurant, and they were going someplace where he had to dress up. And Homer came downstairs, and he had a tie, but his dress shirt was short sleeves. It was a short sleeve dress shirt. And so he comes down, and Marge says, "You can't wear a tie with a short sleeve shirt like that." And Homer's like, "Why? Sipowicz does it."
I've never heard that song.
Then Marge goes, "You have to go upstairs and change." And as he's walking up the stairs, he goes, "I wish I was Sipowicz."
My God, I love that. That's so weird because not having seen that scene, I've literally had this discussion with Jeannie that I'm going to bring the short sleeve with tie look back.
Yeah, man. The Sipowicz look, we can call it.
The Sipowicz look.
Yeah, yeah. "I wish I was Sipowicz." And that was during that sweet spot because like as I've said before, like between 1992 and 1997, there was nothing better on television than The Simpsons. Nothing. That stretch right there, the best writing on TV, the funniest show ever, really incredibly clever and heartfelt. Without question, that stretch right there, 92 to 97. There was nothing even close to being as good as The Simpsons on TV. And, of course, you know, the show's been on for so long that they go through a lot of writers, and there are a lot of hills and valleys and stuff like that, and it's not very good now. It hasn't been very good for a long time, but those seasons right there, like for 5-6 years, that it was incredible. And the Sipowicz joke was during that time. That was back when, like, Conan O'Brien was writing for The Simpsons in that golden era.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's where he got his start. All right, we got some texts coming in here about, like, couples that would never work. 708 area code, Whoopi Goldberg and Sam Elliott in Fatal Beauty. Fatal Beauty, oh my God, I totally forgot about that movie. Yeah, Sam Elliott and Whoopi Goldberg, come on now. You ever see Fatal Beauty, Tom?
I wish.
Oh my God. You know who directed it?
Who's that?
Tom Holland, who directed Child's Play and Fright Night.
What a move.
Yeah. Yeah. 630 area code, that's what we call a lateral move. 630 area code says Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis and Top Gun, yuck, no chemistry.
100% agree.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that too.
There's very few actresses that I think Tom Cruise really gels with.
Oh, interesting.
I think he certainly did with Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah.
Well, it's because they were dating in real life. Rebecca De Mornay in Risky Business. I'm trying to think if there's. Renee Zellweger and Jerry Maguire.
I didn't buy that one either.
Really?
That relationship.
Really?
Mm-mm, I really didn't.
Well, you can't say Days of Thunder and Far and Away because he was married to Nicole Kidman at that time.
You know what's weird is what's that movie where they were in together with the
Eyes Wide Shut?
He came over from Ireland.
That's Far and Away.
I didn't buy it in that.
No, was it terrible?
They married. That's just because of his accent.
They were married. His accent was horrible. His accent made me crazy because we were talking about this, Tom. Yeah. You know, my favorite accent is the Irish accent.
That's beautiful.
It just makes me happy just to hear it. And Far and Away is a long movie. So you had to hear him talk like that for almost 3 hours, and I wanted to punch him right in the mouth. I was like, because it was one of the worst Irish accents I've ever heard in my life.
I thought he was going to start selling me Lucky Charms.
Oh, excellent. That's the route he went down. Ooh, leprechaun, you know, like, what? I will say this, Eyes Wide Shut, it's a fantastic movie. Stanley Kubrick's last movie.
There's a leprechaun out there right now listening. Where does that guy get off?
847 says Jean Reno and Natalie Portman in The Professional. Great movie. We talked about this yesterday.
Yeah,
I disagree. The relationship would never work. She was like 12 in the movie, and he would be put in jail, rightly so. Well, I mean, their relationship is not. I mean, it's not like there's a bit of a kind of like a crush romantic kind of a thing, but they don't. You know. The listener is upset about the possibility of the relationship, but she's fine with him teaching her to kill people. I guess that's okay.
Listen, teaching children to murder, that's fine.
Yeah.
I draw the line at that kind of... And I mean, it's hinted at, but he's uncomfortable with it. It's that schoolgirl infatuation that's at the heart of it. He's not actually going for that.
And one of the most embarrassing Gary Oldman performances of
you just
all
stop
time.
Now.
It's an... Everyone!
I love it!
I hate that movie. 804 area code. John Travolta and Lily... Oh, God, that's a good... That's... Okay. Has anybody ever seen John Travolta and Lily Tomlin in this movie called Moment by Moment? Does anybody remember this movie?
No.
Oh, my God. Says worst film. It's
just Google it.
It was so awful. It was so awful. And, like, seriously, like, the worst idea for a couple, like, one of the worst ideas for a couple ever was that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, and it was a terrible movie. Oh, my God, was it. It was, you know, like, this was at the time when Travolta was never hotter.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great-looking guy in this. I'm looking at some of the images. She was actually, you know.
She's beautiful. I love Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
But like
Miss Frizzle?
Yeah. I love her. And I got to interview Lily Tomlin. I was a nervous wreck when I interviewed her. Nervous wreck.
Like, just
fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Like, really nice and really funny and obviously brilliant. But like, Travolta was coming off of Saturday Night Fever and Grease when that movie came out. And you know what I mean? Like, those are the back-to-back two of the biggest movies ever made. And then he follows it up with Moment by Moment.
Yeah, we can't all be zingers.
Yeah. My guess is he may have changed agents after that. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, wasn't Travolta's name, his character name, Strip, in that movie?
Yeah, yeah. A terrible movie.
But I never saw it, no. Hey, now here's a couple. They were great in the movie together, but we have a term for it called outkicking your coverage. Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, no, okay.
I mean, she's so smoking hot. I mean, who would be good enough for her?
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it's like Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei is a very weird coupling, because Marissa Tomei is just drop dead gorgeous, and Joe Pesci is Joe Pesci. But somehow they make it work in the movie, because I love that movie and I love their relationship in that movie. But they make it outside of the physical difference between the two. They're a great couple in the movie, and they're both fantastic in it.
When she says, oh, yeah, you blend.
I love her in that movie. And people are still like, you know what, that was, there's no way she should have won the Academy Award for that movie. And some people still say that Jack Palance was drunk and read the wrong name. You know, and then people maintain that there's no way that she should have won. She's great in that movie and deserved the Oscar.
And, not The Wrestler.
And
she's great.
She's fantastic in The Wrestler. She's great in everything. And she's now the hot aunt Aunt May is now hot.
She just keeps getting younger and younger.
I know. Marissa Tomei is like my age. She's like 53, 54 years old, and she looks like she's 25.
Remind myself that Cuba Gooding got the Oscar over Edward Norton in Primal Fear.
Yeah, you know? I know. You're right. That's absolutely nuts. Yeah.
Hey, right. Great show, buddy.
Thank you, Doc. Take care, buddy. My Cousin Vinny. I love that movie, man. That was a real surprise, though, that movie. I remember when it came out, Joe Pesci had just done, he had done some really bad movies, because he had just won, he won the Oscar for Goodfellas. He won the supporting actor for Goodfellas. And he followed it up with this movie called The Super, which was an awful movie, where he played like a slumlord super of a bunch of buildings in New York, and it was a terrible slapstick, dumb comedy. And then I remember seeing the trailers for My Cousin Vinny, and I'm like, what is he doing? Because and then I saw the movie, and it was smart, and it was funny, and it was really well written, and I thought it was going to be, you know, New York guy, stereotypical New York guy in the South, and they were going to have, you know, the South was going to look stupid, and they were all going to come off as idiots, you know? That's not the case at all. Everybody was treated with respect. The characters were smart. It was just that they were different because of where they were from and where they were and how they were raised. It killed me that how good it was, because I really thought it was just going to be stereotypical, awful, insulting cliches, and that's not at all what that movie is. So anyway, but yeah, it's a weird couple. That's all I'm saying. It is a weird couple. All right. We're going to take a break here real quick, and we'll come back with more. The wait is over today. The Cubs open their season against Texas. The special pregame next year is here at 2:30, and then the first pitch is at 3 on WGN-TV. I like this person who requested this. I love The Fix, one of my favorite bands. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday! That, of course, is The Fix. And who requested The Fix?
That was our main man, Ike.
Ike. Right. Good choice, Ike. Love The Fix. Fantastic. And we'll get to hear two more songs because it's Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah!
And it's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We were talking about relationships in TV and movies that would never, ever work. And then after the 3:30 news, this is the date back in 1979, which Phantasm, one of my favorite movies of all time, was released. So it's celebrating the 40th anniversary of Phantasm. And we're going to talk about other things that turned 40 this year, including movies and people and gadgets and products and stuff like that. And I'll talk a little bit more about Phantasm after 3:30. But let's wrap this topic up. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, talking about relationships that would never, ever work and pairing of actor and actress or actors that would never work. The next one here that they're talking about, another one that they mentioned in the Cracked article, is the romance between Ace Ventura and Melissa. So that would be Jim Carrey and Courtney Cox, is basically like an adult dating a six-year-old. Melissa is a smart businesswoman, while Ventura is a childish, some would say clinically insane, pet detective who on occasion uses his butt cheeks to talk. Those two dating is simply mind-boggling. Do they date in that movie?
No, it's
at the
like
end.
They're interests. They're like romantic interests.
But there's no romance between the two of them.
Not explicitly, no.
No. So I don't.
But they're kind of. She's the leading lady. I'm pretty sure he hits on her like a decent amount.
Yeah.
So I guess by the end of it, though, she's like, you know, nah, you're all right.
Yeah. I mean, because during the movie, she's like, what are you doing? Like, she's like constantly like, I remember the first time I saw Ace Ventura. I thought it was going to be a kid's movie. I thought, oh, you know, and it was just at that
time.
So
did my folks.
No, is that right?
Yeah.
At that time, Jim Carrey was just the white dude on In Living Color.
Sure.
You know, I had known him from his stand-up days because I always thought he was very funny. And obviously, I knew him from In Living Color, and I thought he was great on In Living Color. But this was like his first starring role, and I saw commercials for it, and I'm like, oh, Jim Carrey's doing a kid's movie. And then I go and see it, and within 5 minutes, he's receiving oral sex. And I was like, what are we watching? What is this? And it's not a kid's movie at all. I mean, there's some really raunchy stuff in the Ace Ventura.
Yeah, second one as well, When Nature Calls.
Yeah, I mean, when he comes out of the rhino, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. I love both of those movies. I love those movies. And I was just I had to adjust to what I was watching when the first time I saw Ace Ventura. I was like, oh, this is not a kid's movie. Okay. There are things in that movie that just kill me. When he goes out on the balcony and goes, and slams the door, I fall off my chair laughing every single time.
I will say, we just got a text from the 847. There is a scene in Ace Ventura where him and Courtney Cox are in bed together. I don't particularly remember it, but I could see that.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've watched it.
Yeah, I've seen it 9,000 times, but I haven't watched it in a very, very long time. All right, here's a good one. This relationship would never happen. In Seinfeld, George Costanza proposes to Susan Ross, and she says yes. Why would a rich, ambitious lady marry a neurotic idiot with anger issues? That's a great point.
Ask my girlfriend.
And then the funny thing about that is he's the one who breaks it off with her. And do you know why? By Susan dies, right? Do you know the reason why Susan dies?
Is that's the stamps? Right?
No, it's the envelope on the wedding invitation.
The envelope.
It's the glue. The glue was toxic.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, nobody liked working with her. Nobody liked working with the actress. Yeah,
I can see that.
Yeah, nobody liked working with her. And Costanza and her they talk about this in the behind the scenes stuff. Jason Alexander kept saying to Larry David and some of the other people that were directing the shows, like, I can't, I there's we're, we can't work well together. I can't work with this woman anymore. And they're like, shut up. And then what happened was, because he was the only one that ever worked with her. So then they did a couple of episodes where Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Jerry Seinfeld had to work with her. And once Jerry Seinfeld, who obviously co-creator of the show, worked with her and found out how difficult she was and how difficult it was, you know, like the way she, like her style and everything, he went to Larry Day and he was like, we got to get rid of her. And so that's why they killed her off. That's why they killed her off.
Ain't that just the way?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you make it difficult on Jerry. So it's okay, I guess, to, you know, to make it difficult for Jason Alexander. But once you pass that and you start making it difficult for Jerry Seinfeld, then
you're out.
You're out.
Dunzo.
Yeah, absolutely. How about this one? In The Hangover, Phil, Bradley Cooper, is really cool and fun, and he's a troublemaker. Stu, Ed Helms, is a wimpy whiner who falls apart at the first sign of trouble. Why the hell are they friends?
So. Well, I mean, that's common, though.
Yeah.
Everybody's got that dude in their friend group.
And also, you know, if I don't remember, because I hate the Hangover movies. I hate those movies.
That was a Nighthawk for me. I got Nighthawked on that.
Yeah.
Used to love it. Thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And then I just watched it maybe like, I don't know,
it's
2 years ago.
They're all bad.
Oh, it's not funny.
It's not funny at all. And all three of them suck. They're terrible. And but to say this, you know, if I remember correctly, they knew each other for a long time. Like they were friends for a very long time. And you know, when you have a friend that long, and if they have kind of an alternate personality than you do, you still stick with them if you've known them a really, really long
time.
Yeah,
of course.
So, and then of course we have the Muppets. Miss Piggy is a narcissist that regularly beats and hits her partner Kermit, slaps him around. Throughout the course of their relationship, it seems totally implausible that a kind, thoughtful, and philosophical frog like Kermit would stay so long with such a vain and vapid partner that physically abuses him or even simply hugs one of his friends. Not to mention the fact that he's a frog and she's a pig.
Not the point.
That's not the point. Doesn't even enter into it. Oh, boy.
But they have sweet moments, right?
I guess. I was never, you know, my thing is that my least favorite Muppet is Miss Piggy. She's by far my least favorite Muppet.
She had moments for me.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, you know, love Miss Piggy and think it's hilarious. The character drives me nuts.
The only one I really care about, though, is Animal.
Animal rules.
He's
Beaker.
The best.
You gotta love Beaker. Oh, yeah. Gotta love Beaker.
Me, 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 me.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So... All right. Well, there you go. So there you go. Now, let's talk about things turning 40. We're going to do that when we get back from the break after the news. Like I mentioned before, the movie Phantasm, which is a very seminal movie for me in my teenage years, one of my favorite horror movies of all time, came out on this date in 1979. So today is actually the exact 40th anniversary of the release of Phantasm. So we'll talk a little bit about Phantasm, and we will talk about other things that turn 40 this year, including people and other TV and other movies and products as well. So if you want to jump in with anything that you know is turning 40 or your thoughts on Phantasm, if you've ever seen it, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll kick off that conversation after the news, which is next. I love The Fix. Yeah, very cool. And, so there's The Fix. That's Triple Play Thursday. And so it's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. It's Nick DiGilio. Hello. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m., and we're talking about things that turned 40 this year. Including movies and people and other items, so we can all feel really old. So the deal is, as I mentioned before, on this date, March 28th, in the year 1979, a groundbreaking horror film, low-budget little horror film called Phantasm was released, and it would forever change me. Blew my mind when I saw it. I absolutely loved it. And ended up seeing it over 100 times in the theaters. that year, especially during the summer. I mean, I spent a ridiculous amount of time in movie theaters watching Phantasm during the summer of 1979. It was a movie that really hit me like a ton of bricks. One of the reasons why is because the lead character in the movie is a 14-year-old boy. And I was a 14-year-old boy when I saw it. Well, 13 when I first saw it, but 14, you know, during the summer of 79, I turned 14. So the lead character in the movie is this kid named Mike, who, 14-year-old kid, and he gets to do the coolest stuff in the world in this movie. Riding motorcycles, driving a kick-ass muscle car, shooting shotguns, you know, killing demons, and basically doing all the really cool stuff in a horror movie that usually adults get to do. And so that really, because as a huge horror fan that I was, you know, and still am, but back then I was like this massive horror fan, and I'd seen a ton of movies. And this was the first time I'd ever seen someone my age, a kid my age, doing all the cool stuff, like the really badass cool stuff that normally adults get to do in horror movies. And, you know, being the horror freak that I am, I found this to be just, like, unbelievable. I was like, oh, my God. And this kid was my hero. And it hit me. I also thought it was an incredibly original movie. I thought it was scary. I thought it was, I love the score. I thought everything about the movie was just great. Doesn't make a lick of sense. Phantasm doesn't make, like, logically, I don't care. But to me, it's all justified because the movie plays, as far as I'm concerned, the movie plays like the fever dream of a 14-year-old kid. And then ultimately, that's what it turns out to be. By the time we get to the end of the movie, we realize that it has been a dream. Like it's been, and that's what it plays like. There's a real incredible dreamlike surrealistic quality to the movie that's really beautiful. And so it plays like a fever dream of a 14-year-old kid. So this movie like really was seminal for me, and it hit me on a gut level. And so I saw it a ton of times and I loved it. First time I ever saw it, I saw it with my friend Dan Long. Not the Dan Long that's working here this morning, and my father. And we went to the Woods Theater in the Loop. We saw it on a Sunday morning, the Sunday morning that it was released. So that would be, I saw it March 30th, 1979. That would be the first time I saw the movie, would be March 30th, 1979, in the morning on a Sunday. As soon as it was over, I was like, oh my God. I mean, like, it just, and then I went to see it a million times, over and over and over again. And then in the ensuing years later, with my association with the Flashback Horror Convention, of which I am a host, I have had the incredible honor of you know, meeting and talking to Don Coscarelli, who wrote and directed it. The first time I ever interviewed Don Coscarelli was in 2003 when Bubba Hotep was being released, and I was one of the first people that championed that movie. And so I got to know Don. And then there was a Phantasm reunion in 2008. It was the entire main cast and Don, and I got to meet them all, and I became friends with them. And I've known Don now. I can call Don on my phone right now. I can call Don Coscarelli on my phone right now. And Michael Baldwin, who, you know, plays the lead in the movie, I've got his number and these guys. And I knew Angus Scrimm. Got to know Angus Scrimm, who I've met several times and talked to several times until, you know, he died a couple of years back. And they're all wonderful people. They're all great people, humble people, and awesome. And they couldn't have been nicer to me, especially Don. Don really, and Don is very appreciative of people who like Phantasm. And he knows that if you were to ask Don Coscarelli point blank, who's the biggest Phantasm fan of all time, without question, he would say me. Whenever I've had Don on or I've had the cast on, Don would always come up with really, really difficult trivia questions about the movie and then put me on the spot and ask me. I've not missed one. Every time he came on the show, he would ask me like really specific questions. Not, you know, for someone who saw the movie 100 times in the theater, and I can't tell you the number of times, you know, on video or Blu-ray or any of that stuff. These questions are, you know, like I'm going to know these questions. I know every frame of that movie. So it was a big movie for me, and it's hard to believe that it was 40 years ago today that it was released. And so I thought we'd talk about other things that turn 40, movies that turn 40, and other stuff that turns 40. And if you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We mentioned earlier, you know, one of the stories that that Vic did in the news at the top of the show involved Three Mile Island. For those people who don't remember, there was a nuclear meltdown at a power plant in Pennsylvania, and it was really, really scary. And what happened was, it was the nuclear power plant, South Central Pennsylvania, called Three Mile Island, in March of 1979. On this date, March 28, 1979, a series of mechanical and human errors at the plant caused the worst commercial nuclear accident in U.S. history, resulting in a partial meltdown that released dangerous radioactive gases into the atmosphere. Three Mile Island stoked public fears about nuclear power, and no nuclear power plants have been built in the United States since that accident. And then, unbelievably, 2 weeks later, the film The China Syndrome was released, which, of course, logically, also turns 40 years old this year. The thriller called The China Syndrome, starring Jane Fonda, Jack Lemmon, and Michael Douglas, dealt with the aftermath of a fictional nuclear meltdown at a reactor outside of Los Angeles. The nuclear industry at the time dismissed the China Syndrome plot as far-fetched, but then, you know, obviously they couldn't do it anymore. So I did not know that that happened today, and I remember it vividly. I remember when Three Mile Island happened, and I was 13 years old, and everybody was freaking out about nuclear power, and everybody was freaking out about the accident, and then this movie China Syndrome comes out. Of course, then the box office goes through the roof for that movie because real-life events were being, portrayed, or these fictional events in the movie were being actually really happening in real life. And so the box office just went through the roof. With that. And it's also a great movie. If you've never seen China Syndrome, another movie that's celebrating its 40th anniversary this year, you should see it. It is it's a great thriller. It's, you know, really says a lot about not just nuclear power, but about the media. Great performances all the way around. Jane Fonda is great in it. Michael Douglas is great in it, but especially Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon is unbelievably great in the China Syndrome. So the Three Mile Island accident happened today, 40 years ago, and China Syndrome came out at this time, too, 40 years ago. So in addition to Phantasm, lots of other stuff turns 40 this year, and we'll get into some of the movies, and we'll get into some of the other things. We got a text here, 301 area code says 1979 movies that are 40 years old. Superman was 1978. Alien, yes, Alien turns 40 this year.
They've got such a cool celebration going on later.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got like six shorts that they're going to be releasing, mm-hmm. all by different directors.
Well, they're showing it, a 35mm print of it, at the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
Yeah.
At the Music Box.
I'm getting my tickets.
It's in May. And see that movie on the big screen, 35mm, will be a lot of fun. That's 40 years old. Again, by the way, all of this is making me feel really old. Like, The Deer Hunter, somebody said Deer Hunter's 78. Deer Hunter was 78. The Warriors, also 70. That was 79. So, The Wanderers, they said, is 1978. It is 1978. And then 1941 came out in 1979, 40 years old. So there you go. Some of the other ones. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here are some of the other movies that turned 40 this year. I'm just going to rattle some of these things off, and we'll talk about them if you want to jump in. I also have Products and People who turned 40 this year, if you want to jump in. But let's first talk to Jay here. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Great show. I want to comment and say I had written a paper for school 40 years ago. Calvin Klein jeans came onto the market, and Brooke Shields' famous slogan, "Nothing will come between me and my Calvin."
Right.
So I wanted to make a comment, and I had a crush on Brooke Shields 40 years ago. I'm sure she's your age, Nick.
She's exactly my age. She's 53.
She's exactly right. You're a perfect couple. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll watch Phantasm and think of you, Nick.
All right, Jay. Thanks, buddy. Yeah, the Calvin Klein commercials, those were so controversial. You know, because, like, you know, she's 14 years old, you know?
Right.
And there was a very suggestive commercial, and the print ads were very suggestive. And I just remember there was a big brouhaha over the fact that she was, like, this, you know, young teenage girl doing these very provocative mm-hmm. Calvin Klein commercials. And they were really provocative, especially for that time.
But a game changer for marketing. That's like when they come out with the swoosh and just do it, really.
Yeah. No, it was, I mean, obviously they sold a lot of pants. There's no question about it. I mean, I went to high school 79 to 83, and that's all the girls were wearing. They were
Calvin's.
Tight. No, well, not just tight designer jeans.
Yeah.
They had designer names on their butts. That's what I remember. Tight designer jeans and like velour shirts and feathered hair. That was the look. That was the look, and I loved it. So, all right, let's take a break. Phantasm turns 40. If you got anything to say about that movie, we'd love to hear from you. What else turns 40 this year? I'll tell you all about it. We got a bunch of movies that also turn 40 in addition to Phantasm and a lot of other really cool things, and we're going through that. What turns 40 this year? Let's all feel old. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Let's break here for some weather. We've got the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, cloudy and breezy, a high of 63. Chance for light rain showers early in the morning and then again in the afternoon. Tonight, down to about 36 for a low. Tomorrow, cloudy, breezy, cool, high of 42. Rain in the afternoon. Cloudy and cold overnight, down to the 30s for a low tomorrow night. And then Saturday, cloudy, windy, colder, light rain, and a possible wintry mix, especially north. Low temperatures in the upper 20s. And then for Sunday, mostly sunny, but quite cool, clear and cold at night with a low in the mid-30s. It is currently 49 degrees at O'Hare, it's 48 at Midway, and it's 49 degrees at the lakefront. Let's take a break right now, and when we come back, other movies and things that turn 40 this year. Okay. More fix for you. That's deeper and deeper. Actually used in the movie Streets of Fire. A classic with Michael Paré and Diane Lane, one of Willem Dafoe's early movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're feeling old here. It's Nick DiGilio. And coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. All righty, then. We are talking about things that were made or born or invented in 1979, on this very date, March 28th, 1979. One of the best horror movies ever made, one of my favorite movies of all time, Phantasm, was released 40 years ago today, which is just unbelievable that it's been that long. And so we were talking about other movies and other things that were that are celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. So, it's, for instance, let's go down for some movies. Blake Edwards, 10. Is 40 years old this year. Dudley Moore, Julie Andrews, and of course, it introduced the world to Bo Derek. I love this movie. I think it's Blake Edwards' best movie, and it is maybe the best movie about the male ego turning 40 ever made. It's also very funny, but it's really truthful and really well acted, and everybody in it is great. I think it's a really great piece of work, and it's hard to believe it was 40 years ago that it came out, and we get introduced to the great Bo Derek, for the beautiful Bo Derek, who of course stars in Tommy Boy. So you know, we mentioned 1941, Steven Spielberg's World War II insane epic with an all-star cast. you know, John Belushi, Ned Beatty, Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Toshiro Mifune, Robert Stack, Warren Oates, Tim Matheson, Nancy Allen, Treat Williams, Slim Pickens. It goes on and on and on.
Just the fact that Toshiro Mifune is in
it's
it.
Ridiculous.
That's...
And he's paired up with Christopher Lee. Their scenes are... all of their scenes are with Christopher Lee. It's Christopher Lee and Toshiro Mifune. It's fantastic. Upon release, it was considered a gigantic bomb. It did not do well at all. Came out Christmas time of 1979, and at that time, you know, Belushi and Aykroyd were, you know, through the roof. At that time, they were they had just left Saturday Night Live, and were basically just going to be pursuing movies at this point. And Belushi couldn't have been bigger, and Spielberg, you know, was coming off of Close Encounters, so you know, and this was his first bomb. This was the first movie, you know, where people were like, oh, Steven Spielberg is capable of making a bomb, because all of his movies at that point had been hits. So I loved it, you know, from the moment I saw it. Now, again, this is another one of those movies that has gotten, you know, people now like it. But when it came out, everybody hated it.
No, it's benefited from reevaluation.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And it's a big, crazy movie. You know, I'd be the first to admit it's nuts. And they went way over budget on it. And I like to say that it's Steven Spielberg's It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. That's sort of the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. It's like this all-star, insane, over-the-top movie, and there's a lot of funny stuff in it. And you know, the special effects are terrific. The practical effects,
oh, of course.
When Belushi is, you know, is in the fighter plane, and they're going down Hollywood Boulevard, all of that stuff was beautiful, practical, you know, small miniature effects. And I do think it's funny. I think 1941 is a funny movie. It's loud and crazy, and I watch it every Christmas. It's one of the. It's a movie that because it takes place during during the Christmas season, right after the attack on Pearl Harbor, and I love it. I think it's great. It's actually like high on my Spielberg list. I think it's great. We mentioned Alien, of course, turning 40 this year, which is insane. And then earlier. This morning, we were talking with our good friend Dan Feinberg, the TV series on FX called Fosse Verdon, which is about Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon, is debuting on April 9th. And turning 40 this year is All That Jazz, which is another one of my favorite movies, with Roy Scheider, Ben Vereen, Anne Ryan King, Jessica Lange. I love All That Jazz. It's just such a great movie, and it's hard to believe that that movie's 40 years old, too. Here's another one. Turns 40 this year, and Justice for All with Al Pacino. I love this movie, too. This is another one of those movies that I've seen like a million times, and I know every line of dialogue, too. And it's funny, and it's really over the top and dramatic, and I think Pacino's great in it. It's a, you know, it's a satire, and I think it works. And I think And Justice for All has got, obviously, some really iconic moments sprinkled throughout it. And it was a big hit. Pacino got nominated for it for Best Actor. John Forsythe, Christine Lotti, one of her first movies. Jack Warden, who is just, you know, was a national treasure and was fantastic in that movie. Also turning 40 this year, Apocalypse Now, which, again, all of this stuff, you know, naming these titles and saying that they're 40 years old. It's hard to believe that it was 40 years ago that I was at the State Lake Theater on a Sunday morning watching Apocalypse Now and being incredibly blown away by it. And it was in 70 millimeter with the insane Dolby sound. And it was an overwhelming experience seeing that movie on the big screen with the insane sound in 70 millimeter. Just really overwhelming. Because, you know, the theaters that used to be downtown in the Loop, they were big movie, old school movie palaces that had giant screens and big auditoriums and like, could seat over 1,000 people. You get a couple, you know, 2,200 people in some of these theaters down there with these massive massive screens and incredible sound systems. And, you know, it was the heyday of 70 millimeter. And Apocalypse Now took advantage of all of that. I remember the opening scene, the helicopter sounded like they were behind the screen and actually the helicopters like moving around the auditorium. It was a pretty overwhelming experience. You got Martin Sheen, you got Marlon Brando, Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall, so amazing in it. Lawrence Fishburne's first movie, Dennis Hopper, insane. 40 years old, if you can believe that. How about this one? Being There turns 40 this year. We were talking about Hal Ashby just not too long ago, and Being There turns 40.
That's a weird feeling.
Yeah, 40 years old.
Still feels just as vibrant.
It still works.
Hasn't aged a day.
No, and it's a brilliant movie. Peter Sellers is unbelievable in it. Shirley MacLaine, Melvin Douglas, again Jack Warden. Jack Warden was one of the best. He was one of my favorites. He could do anything. Jack Warden. He could do comedy. He could do drama. All of that and everything in between. And when he did comedy, he was funny as hell because he's in Used Cars and he plays a dual role in Used Cars and he's unbelievably funny in that movie. But Being There was this movie that really took people by surprise, and it became like a huge hit that nobody really thought because it's based on a novel by Jerzy Kosinski, and it's a very heady piece and a weird piece, and people still debate what the ending was at the end of that movie. The end of that movie where Peter Sellers he's walking on water at the end of the movie, and what does that mean? And he's just this simple guy, Chance the Gardener, doesn't know anything about gardening and TV, and he becomes like a prophet and a hero to people, and it really says something about, and it really does. I mean, Hal Ashby, you know, it's beautifully understated, And, you know, he was so great with actors. Ashby was just, you know.
One of the best.
Yeah. And, you know, he always got great performances out of the people in his movies. And that's certainly the case with Being There. And it's hard for me to believe, 40 years old. I saw that movie at the Water Tower Place where they used to have theaters in the Water Tower Place. So I can remember where I saw all these movies 40 years ago. So, and we've got other things that turned 40 this year, too. Not just movies, but products and people as well. Well, we're talking about things that are 40. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News is next. You gotta hear Three Sticks songs. Oh my God. Who requested Sticks? Did Dennis DeYoung call in and request this?
Pull it up right here. That's coming from Brian, Montana.
In Montana.
Way out.
Appreciate you listening in Montana. You're not even from Chicago when you chose Sticks?
Sticks played my high school way back in the day.
They played a ton of high schools. That was
their shtick.
Yeah, back when they first started. I can't even tell you the number of people who have called in and said, "Yeah, they played my dance. They played my prom. They did." You know,
damn.
Yeah,
I'd go down for it if Renegade was playing.
Yeah, well, this is way pre-Renegade. So 312. I don't think you know. Like by the time they had the success that they had by the time Renegade came out, I really don't think they were playing high schools. That's
nah.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. And we've been talking about things that turn, mostly movies that turn 40. And I've got a bunch of other stuff that turned 40. Because on this very date, March 28th, 1979, the great horror film Phantasm was released and kind of affected my life massively. And so we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the great film Phantasm, and other things are celebrating 40th anniversaries as well, and we've been going through some of the movies that have come out then, and we got some texts here too. 773 area code. That's Wild Bill. Wild Bill says Disco Demolition was 40 years ago in July. Yes, I know. I was there. I was at Disco Demolition. I've talked about it on the air many times, and it was insane. It was completely insane. 219 area code says Supertramp's Breakfast in America and AC/DC's Highway to Hell turn 40. That's true. We were talking about Supertramp yesterday and the fact that during the summer of 1979, in between viewings of Phantasm, I was listening to Breakfast in America.
That's a potent mix.
Yeah. Mike from Frankfurt says Frank Zappa's Joe's Garage album, I believe, came out in 79. I do not know. Perhaps it did. We got more movies that came out in 1979. The Black Hole with Anthony Perkins, Maximilian Schell, and Ernest Borgnine came out. And that's significant. The Black Hole was significant because it was the first Disney movie not rated G. It was the first movie released by Disney that was rated PG. And this was at a time, you know, after, you know, like post Star Wars when, you know, the space movies were really big. And this was about, you know, a spaceship on the middle of universe. And it comes across a black hole that's sucking everything into it. And I remember they were talking about how great the special effects were. It's a terrible movie. Terrible movie. All right, you know what else? We'll get back to the movies in a minute. Here are some other things that turn 40. You know, turning 40 this year, the Walkman.
So, like, the tape Walkman.
Yeah. Yeah, oh well, no, God. CDs didn't come around. They
weren't until much later, but...
Oh, the Walkman, 40 years old. It says, until Sony revolutionized the music with its Walkman, popular songs were primarily consumed via records and radio at home or in the car. Not only did this palm-sized player allow listeners to take music with them in any environment... The Walkman helped popularize mixtapes. Music suddenly became more personal and customizable. So I don't know. I didn't get a Walkman until the 80s. So I did not have a Walkman in 1979.
Probably ruined a lot of people's hearing, too. Because all of a sudden you go from only listening to music at home to you can listen to it anywhere. People are blasting it.
Yep. How about this? The Happy Meal turns 40 this year. The McDonald's Happy Meal. The name itself was brilliant. Who wouldn't want a Happy Meal? But the true genius of the Happy Meal was giving picky kids and their parents exactly what they wanted, from burger to fries to cheap plastic toys. No more would mom and dad have to prod their children and just say, just pick something. The old Happy Meal. that was in 1979. Wow. How about this? The Dustbuster is 40 years old.
Woof.
Roomba are cool and all, but they can't crawl up the cabinets and suck crumbs from the kitchen counters. The Dustbuster became a symbolic appliance in the 80s. No yuppie home was complete without one mounted on the kitchen wall like a cordless phone. Black & Decker Dustbuster, 40 years old this year.
My dad was a neat freak. That thing was his golden,
yeah,
his golden chalice.
I know a lot of people who were kind of overusing their Dustbuster.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Could have eaten off the floors of my house. Just
he should have carried it around with a holster.
Oh, that would have been damn.
Right next to his beeper. Right next to his pager.
That I hated.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
How about Hubba Bubba?
Really?
Hubba Bubba, 40 years old. As grandfathers like to say, back in my day, we had to walk 5 miles, etc. But if you really want to tell youngins how hard their childhoods were, they should stick to gum, because gum itself used to be hard, rock hard. Bubblicious introduced soft gum, soft chewing gum in 1977. When Hubba Bubba hit the market 2 years later, the brand instead focused on its lack of stickiness. It pops all over your face, and it's easy, and it easily peels, so you can get rid of, so the bubble will not stick on your face. That's what the ad here says. I'm trying to remember the name of the gum. Bubble Yum.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
that Bubble Yum was introduced earlier.
Uh huh.
And this is a real thing. You can look this up on Snopes. Tom, I don't know if you've ever heard this or not, but the urban legend about Bubble Yum is that it was made with spider eggs. That was the urban legend. You can look it up. I'm telling you, it's probably on Snopes. Bubble Yum. Just Google Bubble Yum spider eggs. Just do that. Bubble Yum spider eggs. So Bubble Yum was the first of its kind. The Bubblicious and the Hubba Bubba, all very similar. And Hubba Bubba turning 40 this year, as we just discovered. But Bubble Yum was the first one to do it. Was the first one of that style of gum.
I'm not getting past the spider eggs here,
yeah,
because here it is, as you said, on Snopes.
Yeah.
And who would start that?
I don't know who started it. All I know is this. I vividly remember where I was when I first heard this urban legend. We were on a field trip to see the King Tut exhibit, the big, massive, insane 1970s King Tut exhibit. Which, of course, inspired Steve Martin's song, King Tut.
Classic.
And we were at the Field Museum on our field trip, and we had just finished seeing the exhibit. And all the students we went into the gift shop. And I went up to the counter, and I got a pack of Bubble Yum, because it was brand new at that time. Like, Bubble Yum was brand new, and it was the thing. Like, kids, my God, we've never had gum like this. It's so amazing. It's so soft, and it's awesome. So I got a pack of Bubble Yum, and I brought it up to the counter, and one of my friends from school goes, "You can't, don't buy that." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Haven't you heard? It's made with spider eggs." I'm like, "What?" Like, "Yeah, it's made with spider eggs." And I guess it's because of the texture of the gum, and it had like when you chewed it, when you would chew on the Bubble Yum, there were like little like, I don't know, like crunchy bits, like,
yeah,
teeny, teeny little crunchy bits that you'd have to chew through to soften it up.
Mm.
And so, I don't know, someone, I guess, decided that they'd start the rumor that those little crunchy bits that you chew through, mm, were actual spider eggs.
Says that it started in the New York area.
Of course it did.
Yeah, they noted, they saw that the whirlwind early sales had slipped noticeably in the New York area. So that I could picture some kid in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Don't eat that.
Don't eat it. Well, this kid said to me, my friend didn't. Of course, I bought it. I was like, shut up. You know, and
not easily fooled.
Yeah. Not only that, but Bubble Yum is delicious. So,
sure.
You know, but I just remember that was, that's exactly the first time I heard that stupid urban legend was in the Field Museum after seeing the King Tut exhibit. When my friend Carl. Carl came up and he was like, "Hey, you can't, don't buy that.
Spider eggs.
It's made with spider eggs." And I was like, what? And that still persisted for years. people around my age, you know, can vividly remember everybody saying that Bubble Yum was made with spider eggs. So, but Hubba Bubba is what turns 40 this year. How about this real quick before we break? Mellow Yellow turns 40 this year. Coke needed a competitor to Mountain Dew and thus dropped this soft drink in 1979. Originally dubbed the world's fastest soft drink, Mellow Yellow proved its point in an early commercial by having dueling cowboys chug cans of the stuff in 5 seconds. What does that even mean?
I figured it meant like fastest through you.
What does that mean? As soon as you drink it, you're going to have to pee? That's a hell of a way to advertise a product.
Well, they call it Mellow Yellow.
Yeah, that's true.
If it's yellow.
That's right. Keep it mellow. It's brown, flush it down. All right, let's take a break. We also have a bunch more movies that turned 40 alongside one of my favorite movies, Phantasm, which was released on this very date in 1979. And we're talking about things and movies and other stuff that turns 40. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. For today, cloudy, breezy, high of 63. Chance of light rain showers early in the morning and then again in the afternoon. We'll get down to a low of 36 tonight. For tomorrow, cloudy, breezy, cool, high of 42. We'll have some rain in the afternoon. Cloudy and cold overnight, lows in the 30s. And for Saturday, cloudy, windy, colder, light rain, possibly a wintry mix, especially north. Low temps in the upper 20s at night. And then for Sunday, mostly sunny but quite cool. Clear and cold at night with a low in the mid-30s. It's currently 49 degrees at O'Hare. It's 48 at Midway. 49 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, more movies and other things that turn 40 this year. Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, Saturday at 9 a.m. on WGN-TV. Yeah, man. I did love this song. And I talked about the night we went to go to old Chicago, and I just kept my radio/tape player recording for over an hour, and I did get Renegade right off the radio. So it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio until 5 o'clock. We're talking about things that turn 40. A seminal movie for me, one of the greatest horror movies ever made, Phantasm, was released on this very date in 1979. It's 40 years old, which makes me feel really old, and we're talking about other things that turn 40. And we were talking about Bubbalicious. Rachel says that, and Hubba Bubba is 40 years old this year. Rachel says, but Bubbalicious is still made in Rockford. I work at the site that makes it. Oh, okay. And then 847 area code says, Hubba Bubba is to Bubble Yum as Cracked is to Mad Magazine. That's pretty good. That ties it in, too, because we took this, we were talking about Cracked a little bit earlier. All right, other things that turn... That turned 40. We got a couple more movies. Breaking Away turns 40 this year, which again makes me feel like really, really old. Dennis Christopher, Dennis Quaid, Daniel Stern, Jackie Earle Haley, Paul Dooley. Truly one of my favorite movies of all time. Great coming of age movie. Just a really wonderful movie and a great sports movie too. Great bike race movie. One of the most ridiculous entries in the airport. Series. You ever see any airport movies?
Wait, there's more than one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, there's like five.
So isn't the first one Airport 77?
No.
No, what's the first?
The first one is just Airport.
Okay.
Then there was Airport 75.
Okay.
There was Airport 77.
Okay.
And then the Concorde, Airport 79. It's 40 years old. And I think there was one more airport. I think there was one more after that, and that was it. But Airport 70, okay, so the original airport was, you know, really like a soap opera, you know, like in the sky. Dean Martin was the star of that one. Airport 75, Charlton Heston, Karen Black, Linda Blair was in Airport 75. Airport 77, Jack Lemmon was the captain, and the plane went down underwater. So they were the plane was underwater. And then the Concorde, Airport 79, was George Kennedy was in all of them. And this was probably the most ridiculous of all of the airport movies, and they're all ridiculous. But the Concorde Airport 79 was just ridiculous. And the casts just kept getting crazier and crazier. Like, they would release these movies with these posters, and they would have, like, these incredible, like, artwork of, like, a plane on fire and people screaming. And then in the bottom of the – they would always line up, like, with little squares – on the bottom, they would have, like, the stars' faces, like the big stars' faces, because it was, like, these all-star lineups. But for the Concorde, Airport 70, Airport 79, you can't really make an airport movie without George Kennedy, but also not without Charo, because Charo was in Airport 79. So by the time Airplane came out, it was time to definitely... You know, it was just rich. The disaster movie genre was a massive success in the 70s. There was disaster movies every week. Irwin Allen was the mastermind behind all the disaster movies, the airport movies, and, you know, Poseidon Adventure, Beyond the Poseidon Adventure, which, by the way, came out in 1979, and Beyond the Poseidon Adventure is celebrating its 40th anniversary as well. So, yeah, they were so stupid. Those movies were so stupid. But yeah, I think that the one celebrating the 40th anniversary this year, the Concorde Airport 79, might be the worst. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi.
How about kids jumping the shark with the release of Dynasty?
Yeah. Yeah, that, well, I mean, I think Kiss always jumped the shark, as far as I'm concerned. Once I turned 12, I realized that I was an idiot for liking Kiss. But yeah, no, they lost a lot of fans when they did I Was Made for Loving You. They lost a lot of fans.
Yep. But a good album was Candy O. That turned 40.
Yeah, the Cars. Yep, that was a 40th anniversary of that. All right, thank you, Jeff.
All right.
Yeah. Yes. I used to be. Well, no, maybe I started to dislike. I mean, I was probably still a Kiss fan when I was 12. It was probably like 13 or 14. So maybe this year is the 40th anniversary of me realizing that Kiss sucks.
I got a soft spot for Kiss. I'll listen to a little Kiss here. Like, yeah. Detroit Rock City still gets me.
Yeah.
Love Gun.
Listen, I have a lot of childhood memories attached to Kiss. I was in the Kiss Army. Hell, I think I was a general. In the Kiss Army. I saw them live in their heyday. Like, I saw them in 76, 77, 78. I saw them like four times. Loved them when I was a little kid. And then as I got older, I was like, and I'd go back and listen to the albums. I'm like, man, these guys suck.
I used to be really into Pink when I was like 8.
Oh, I like Pink. You don't like Pink?
No. I had a babysitter named John Kennedy, of all things.
Yeah.
He came over, and I had my CD player, and I was listening to Pink's Misunderstood.
Great album.
It was. And I've come around on it, but at the time, he came up and he saw me listening to that. He's like, nah, this isn't cool. I was like, really?
So did he put on, what did he put on?
He gave me a copy of, he gave me a copy of The Lord of the Rings,
what?
Which my dad was a big fan of. He gave me a copy of The Lord of the Rings and Led Zeppelin 1.
Okay.
And he was just like, nah, this is going to blow your mind. And it did.
Yeah,
but then it put me in a totally different mentality because I just became a total rockist, and I was just like, "Nah, I won't listen to anything that's not heavy."
I mean,
guitars.
I like everything, but him turning you on to Zeppelin is cool.
Yeah, it was bittersweet. Though,
did he give you the Lord of the Rings because Zeppelin has ridiculous, idiotic lyrics that are about the Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, I think that was. I mean, it's also a great book, and my dad was a fan of the Lord of the Rings,
Because obviously the guys in Zeppelin were fans of Tolkien, and
sure,
but none of it made any sense. Like, whenever they would make references to Lord of the Rings in their lyrics, it would be like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, Ramble On.
Yeah.
Okay, which is one of my favorite Zeppelin songs of all time. It's about a guy leaving a woman and rambling on, okay? But then suddenly, Robert Plant is singing about, in the darkest depths of Mordor, I met a girl so fair, but Gollum, the evil one, crept up and slipped away with her. What the hell are you talking about? Where are you that, you know, when did you get to Mordor? You're like a dude traveling around leaving women behind, and then suddenly you're in Mordor in the darkest depths of Mordor, and Gollum comes out? And why the hell would Gollum steal your girl?
Nick, it's a metaphor, okay? Oh, it's very deep. It's very personal.
Hey, listen, I love Led Zeppelin. Okay?
Everybody does.
But some of the lyrics that these guys came up with, it's like, what are you talking? I mean, clearly they were loaded when they
sure.
They were blowing weed and reading Tolkien, and that's that's essentially what's on display in so many of their songs. It's like every time they make a Tolkien reference, you're going, "What are you doing, man? That, you know, what is this song about?"
You can hear them. You can hear the rolling papers.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, it's blow weed, read Tolkien, write songs. That's in that order. So
what a method.
Yeah. All right. Well, it worked for them. They were the biggest rock band of the 70s.
Hey-o.
Yep. I still love Zeppelin. I don't care.
Oh, rips.
Yeah.
Zeppelin rip.
Yeah, they're the best. All right. Let's take a break. We got the news coming up and then more things that turn 40. Movies and all kinds of other things. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. News is up after this. All right. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That wraps up the Triple Play of Sticks this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, followed by Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. All right. We've been talking about movies and other things that turn 40 this year. And it all started because one of my favorite movies of all time, the seminal movie for me, one of the greatest horror movies of all time, turns 40 this year. In fact, turns 40 today. The movie Phantasm was released on this very date in 1979 and turns 40. That's the anniversary of Phantasm today, 40 years. So we're talking about other things that turn 40 and other movies that turn 40. Like, for instance, Hair, the Milos Forman film version of the famous musical, with Treat Williams, Beverly D'Angelo, and John Savage. I love that movie. I think it's great. And I'm a fan of the musical. You know, it helps that you like the musical. You know, some people hate that musical. So, yeah, that turns 40, which, again, makes me feel really old. How about this? The In-Laws with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin. One of the funniest movies ever. That's 40 years old. Serpentine. written by the great Andrew Bergman. Andrew Bergman, one of the greatest comedy minds. That was a very, very funny movie. And speaking of funny movies, this the very first movie that starred Steve Martin came out 40 years ago. The Jerk came out 40 years ago.
That's his first?
That's the first movie, yeah. He was the juggernaut of mass of stand up comedy. Mm-hmm. His stand up comedy album sold in millions. I saw him twice at live, and he played the amphitheater when I saw him, which is a stadium, you know.
Yeah.
And he was massively popular, obviously on Saturday Night Live and on TV. And his first movie was The Jerk.
Get away from those cans.
Yeah, he hates these cans.
When was The Man with Two Brains?
That was a few years later.
Okay.
He worked with Carl Reiner, because Carl Reiner directed The Jerk, and he worked with Carl Reiner, I think, for the first five movies that he did.
Mm-hmm.
But The Man with Two Brains was, that was early 80s, so it's like, I think it was his third movie.
Okay, yeah.
Because I know he did Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid with Carl Reiner. But The Man with Two Brains is hilarious.
Underrated.
It's hilarious. But The Jerk is really funny. The Jerk is really funny. There are snails on her plate. Kramer versus Kramer. 40 years old. Dustin Hoffman, Justin Henry, Meryl Streep, Joe Beth Williams won Best Picture. Hoffman won Best Actor. It was like the toast of the town 40 years ago when it came out. So how about this? We'll get back to the movies in a minute. But what about this? Honey Nut Cheerios, 40 years old.
I figured they would have been 100.
Honey Nut was not the first flavor variation of the iconic Cheerios cereal. Cinnamon Nut Cheerios first poured into bowls in 1976. But Honey Nut proved to be far more popular with a little help from that cute cartoon bee. Now there is a bazillion varieties of Cheerios. Yes, there are. But Honey Nut, I think Honey Nut remains the... I mean, outside of regular Cheerios, which I probably think sell the most, but Honey Nut Cheerios is right up there.
Were your parents the type that would make you mix them?
No.
Oh, God. I was not... I loved Honey Nut Cheerios, but my mom would be like, no, we got to mix it with regular Cheerios. Which
is because it's not as healthy?
Yeah.
Well, you know why Cheerios sell so much?
Well, they got the big... I know the... Now that, or at least recently, it's the big bowl with a heart that is a heart.
Well, there's that. I mean, it's supposed to be better for your heart. But sure. The reason why Cheerios remains like one of the most popular series, if not the most popular series, is because anybody who has babies buys Cheerios.
Oh, yeah.
If you got a kid, you need Cheerios.
They literally even make books, like children's books, where they play with, you put the Cheerios in a slot.
I don't know anyone who has raised kids who did not give them Cheerios. So, I mean, that's like it's a huge, huge, huge seller. I can't believe it's 40 years. All right, how about this? The Erasermate pen, 40 years old. The Erasermate pen. And that was a big deal. That was a big deal because it was erasable ink. People were losing their minds when it came out. Erasable ink, and that made crossword addicts and essay writers very, very happy. So the Erasermate pen, 40 years old. Here's the problem, though. The ink in those Erasermate pens, they were erasable because the ink sucked. Because you could, you know, it would disappear without even the erase, without the eraser.
Just rub it kind of hard.
It was bad ink. It was bad ink. So, you know, I mean, the idea is great. Hey, I would love to, you know, an erasable pen. That's fantastic. But the ink wasn't so great. They were very, I was very disappointed with my Erasermate. Very disappointed. Now, this is a hard one for me to believe. I thought these would have been around much longer, but the Ring Pop. You know the Ring Pop?
Yeah, of course.
It's the giant lollipop diamond that is on a ring that you put on your finger and then you, mm-hmm. Okay. It's one of the great Halloween treats first slipped onto our fingers in 1979, a decade after the invention of the Blow Pop. Tart and sour raspberry flavors soon followed as the giant gem candy became a kid favorite.
I thought that would have been more recent.
Oh, really? I thought it would have been older.
I don't know. I don't know why. Well, because there must have been a huge thing in the 90s when I was growing up that Ring Pop really came back in a big way.
Yeah.
Because we were all about Ring Pops, Blow Pops, and those damn baby bottle pops.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was a huge moment.
And then finally, you know what else is 40 years old? The Klingon language. Because the Star Trek, the motion picture, is 40 years old. The first Star Trek movie is 40 years old. The movie is knocked for being slow compared to the classic film serial action mm-hmm. of the Star Wars. But the cinematic debut of Kirk and crew gave the franchise new life. Plus, it also, at last, introduced the Klingon tongue. Actor James Doohan, who played Scotty, came up with the basic sounds of the language for the film. It was later fleshed out into a full language, which is now taught in apps and used online. And spoken by geeks everywhere.
If I met someone that could speak the Klingon, I'd be impressed.
Well, that's just... have you ever, you know, have you heard of they would do a Klingon Christmas, and they would perform, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's a Christmas carol but in Klingon. They perform people perform plays in Klingon.
I could see like Shakespeare in Klingon.
Yeah, I think. I mean,
that's pretty cool.
I think that that's. I think that's just that's just a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, so that turns 40 this year. All right, let's see. Another movie, Manhattan. Woody Allen's Manhattan is 40 this year, which I still maintain is his best movie. I'm not a big Woody Allen fan at all.
I'm into Annie Hall.
Annie Hall's great.
Yeah.
Annie Hall's great. And I think Manhattan is like the...
It's up there.
The peak of his movies. And then after that, it goes downhill big time and then uphill sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part... I mean, well, the guy makes 55 movies a year.
Yeah.
So...
He's nothing if not prolific.
Yeah. We were speaking of bad relationships and stuff, and we brought up Kermit and Miss Piggy. The Muppet Movie is 40 years old this year. Orson Welles, Mel Brooks, James Coburn, all-star cast, and it was a massive hit at that time, because The Muppet Show was through the roof at that point. The Muppet Show was just so incredibly popular in the 70s, in the mid-late 70s. And then when the movie came out, it took everybody by storm, and everybody loved it. They loved the music, and it's great. The Muppet movie is great. And it's, of course, now I feel like I'm 900 because it's 40 years old. One of my favorite sports movie of all time is celebrating its 40th anniversary, which is odd because it's not my favorite sport. In fact, it's a sport that I don't really follow. It's a football movie. And my favorite sport is hockey, followed closely by baseball. So a lot of people go, well, how can Slapshot not be your favorite movie, of a sports movie of all time? It's my second favorite. I love North Dallas 40 with Nolte and Mac Davis, Charles Durning, Dabney Coleman. Not only is it just a really terrific movie with great performances. I mean, Mac Davis, for God's sake, not even an actor, a country singer guy, and he kills in that movie. Nick Nolte is unbelievable in it. It's a great performance, and it's also a great expose about pro sports. Like, it gives you the truth about what the NFL, you know, was doing, drugging up the guys and doing all kinds of stuff. And Peter Gent wrote the novel, and it was I think at one point there was a lawsuit against him filed by the NFL, you know, because it was like a defamation thing.
Get too close.
Yeah. But North Dallas 40 years old. I vividly remember seeing that movie in the theater and just like it blowing my mind. And it's still, I still love that movie. You ever hear of a movie called Over the Edge?
Who are the stars?
Well, it's not so much. It's Matt Dillon's first movie. So he was a nobody then. Vincent Spano's in it, and then the cast of people who didn't go on to do anything else. It's a teen rebellion movie. It takes place in 1979.
Uh-huh.
Well, it also, you know, was released in 1979.
Well, because when was The Warriors? Was that
79?
Or not The Warriors. The Outsiders.
The Outsiders 83.
There it is. Okay. Yeah.
The Outsiders was 83.
Really? He had one more before that?
Yeah, we had a couple before that.
Really?
But
I had no idea.
But his very first movie was Over the Edge. It was a movie that not unlike other movies, like, really affected me. This was about a bunch of teenagers who were living in the suburbs and were doing drugs, and it was, you know, and they closed down the rec center, and this is where the kids would go to stay out of trouble, and they closed the rec center down, so the kids rebelled, and it was about a bunch of kids who, you know, smoked pot, got drunk, had nothing to do. And then they rebelled. And the climax of the movie are all the teenagers. There's a big emergency meeting at the school. And so all the parents and everybody, they go there. Law enforcement is in there. And the people who run the school and all the parents, they're in the school having this meeting. And all the kids show up, all the teenagers show up and chain them into the building. And then have a riot outside. It is one of the best teen rebellion movies ever made. I was 14 when I saw it, and I was like, this movie speaks to me. And it is, if you look it up online, Over the Edge has one of the greatest movie soundtracks of all time. I mean, especially considering it came out in 1979. The artists that they had on that soundtrack and the music and the songs that they used in that movie, it is one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, and a really terrific movie that hit me right when at the right time. And it's 40 years old, Over the Edge, and amazing. Okay, let's take a break. We got weather here, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the things that turned 40. And we're going to go with famous people, celebrities who turned 40 this year. That's what we'll close this topic out with. And if you want to jump in, anything out there, 312-981-7200. Okay, here's your weather. From the WGN Chicago Weather Center, today, cloudy and breezy, a high of 63. Chance of light rain showers in the early morning, and then again in the afternoon. Tonight, we'll get down to about 36. Tomorrow, cloudy, breezy, cool, high of 42. Have some rain in the afternoon, and then cloudy and cold overnight, a low in the 30s. And then for Saturday, cloudy, windy, colder, light rain, possibly a wintry mix, especially north. Low temperatures in the upper 20s, so it's going to be chilly. And then on Sunday, mostly sunny, quite cool, clear, cold at night, a low in the mid-30s. It's currently 49 degrees at O'Hare. It's 48 at Midway, 49 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about celebrities that are turning 40 this year. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Did somebody pick the Blues Brothers?
Yep.
And, well, we're only going to hear one.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Briefcase Full of Blues came out. No, it came out in 78, not 79.
Hmm.
So
close.
Yes. Who requested that?
It's coming from our friend John.
All right, John. Sorry you wouldn't be able to get the other two in. We ran out of time. So, and we are back. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we've been talking about things that are turning 40. We're talking about products and movies and all kinds of other cool stuff. Phantasm, one of my favorite movies of all time, was actually released on this very date in 1979, and today is the 40th anniversary of the release of Phantasm, so that's what got us talking about things turning 40. So let's talk about some celebrities that will be turning 40 this year. First up, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
No way.
40 years old. She turned 40 February 21st.
My God.
So Jennifer Love Hewitt turned 40.
Stunning as ever.
Beautiful. Kate Hudson, 40 years old this year. She will turn 40 on April 19th. Evangeline Lilly is 40 years old in August. Chris Pratt turns 40 this year. This all is making me feel very old. Again, all of these things that are turning 40. Chris Pratt is only 40. I'm 13 years older than Chris Pratt. 14 years older than Chris Pratt, actually. Here's somebody that was mentioned a little bit earlier. Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Pink turns 40 this year.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. In September, she will be 40 years old. I enjoy the Pink. I like her.
Yeah.
Adam Levine turned 40 on March 18th. He turned 40.
Hmm.
And his tattoos turned 20. The lovely Rose Byrne will turn 40 this year. I really like Rose Byrne.
Incredibly funny.
Yeah.
Incredibly.
Yeah.
Funny.
Terrific actress and, charming and very, very funny. Yeah. Oh, one of my favorite actors on the planet. One of my favorite actors working today. I will see him in anything, even if it's in a bad movie. James McAvoy is 40 in April. April 21st, he turns 40. Only good thing about Glass, which was such a terrible movie. But I like Split. Split's the only M. Night Shyamalan movie I like.
Really? Not even The Sixth Sense?
I hate The Sixth Sense.
Ah, that's...
Everybody loves Unbreakable. I hated Unbreakable. All of them. I can't stand any of his movies except for Split, and then I hated the final shot of the movie because it turned out that I was watching a sequel to Unbreakable the whole time. But McAvoy's great in that movie. McAvoy's great in everything. I think he's one of the best actors on the planet. I really do. And also, fantastic Scottish accent, too.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart turns 40. And oh my God, I just realized this. I forgot about this. I share a birthday with Kevin Hart.
Really?
Yeah, July 6th. When's your birthday?
November 4th.
November 4th. Another producer that I'm working with who was born in November. That seems to be a trend.
Mm. Got a thing. Scorpios.
And that's interesting, too, because Vic was born in November, too.
Very nice. It's a good month.
But Kevin Hart, 40 this year on my birthday. Mindy Kaling turns 40 this year in June. Aaron Paul turns 40.
Good old Jesse Pinkman.
Yeah, from Breaking Bad and, of course, The Price is Right. Jason Momoa turns 40, so Aquaman is 40.
Me.
Turns 40 in August. Yeah. Seems older, doesn't he? Seems older to me.
I think. Well, maybe it's because he's just, like, so ripped.
Yeah.
He looks like a man half his age.
Yeah, I can't stand that guy. He drives me nuts. I hated Aquaman.
I liked him in Game of Thrones. He did a good job.
I don't watch the Game of Thrones.
So. Ah, there it is.
Brandy turns 40 this year. God, can you believe that?
Yeah.
Man, Brandy and Pink. What the hell just happened?
Still kicking, though. Still doing tours?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Oscar Isaac. Love that guy. Terrific actor. He just turned 40 a couple of weeks ago. Inside Llewyn Davis?
Oh, it's...
Come on, man.
That's a performance of a lifetime, and he's got so much more in him.
That movie is unbelievable. That movie is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And how about, do you ever see A Most Violent Year?
Yeah, that was
Jessica, oh, him and Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, that's rough. That's directed by J.C. Shandor.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Really, really underrated. Nobody saw that movie.
Yeah. Incredibly, it's not that it's poorly paced, but it's slow. It takes a lot of time talking about what it's trying to talk about.
I think it's great. Mm-hmm. Ex Machina. No. Ex Machina.
Great. Come on now.
And then, I mean, I love him in the new Star Wars movies.
Yeah, he's very charismatic.
I think he's great. John Krasinski turns 40.
You're kidding me.
No.
Jim.
Yeah. Jim Halpert turns 40. Pete Wentz turns 40 this year in June.
Certainly doesn't dress like it.
No. Oh, no, he doesn't. Fallout Boy.
Still seen it.
Has obviously lots of connections here. Mm-hmm. Born in Wilmette, the Pete Wentz. Drew Brees, football quarterback there from
still
the Saints.
Going.
Yeah. He just turned 40 in January. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Flo Rida is 40 this year. Born in September, Flo Rida.
Still hustling.
I wonder where he's from.
Kansas?
Bam Margera turns 40 this year.
I used to watch Viva La Bam religiously.
Me too,
on MTV.
Man. Don't even start me on my obsession with Jackass. It's the greatest. It's one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the world.
Don't feed Phil.
No, my God. I can't even explain how much Jackass. You know, here's the thing. I love Jackass. I have every single volume of the TV series on DVD. I have all the movies and the 2.5 and the 3.5. I think Jackass is a gift to the world, and I love it. And my favorite Jackass, unfortunately, got drunk and died in a car accident. It's done. Dunn was my favorite.
Right, Dunn.
He was my favorite. Bam's a close second. Mm-hmm. But I got to say this. As much as I love Jackass, and I adore Jackass, I love everything about it. There'd be no Jackass without Tom Green. There would be no Jackass without Tom Green. He started all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think Tom Green is a genius. And he's another guy who I can call right now. I've become friends with Tom Green.
that's a flex right there.
Well, I did they had this thing at Columbia College called Cinema Slapdown.
Yeah.
What they do is they get two people. One person takes a pro side on a movie. One person takes a con side. They show the movie, and it's free to the public, and a lot of Columbia students go, and then they have a debate. They have a debate afterwards, and Ron Falzone would put a ref shirt on, and he would be like the ref for the debate. Well, I took the pro side to Freddy Got Fingered, because who else would? Because everybody hates that movie. So I took the pro side. They put me up against five guys from I.O., from Improv Olympic.
Oh, jeez.
And I killed them. I destroyed them. We showed the movie. We watched it. And I destroyed them. And I told Tom Green, because he's doing stand-up now. And he came to do Zanies, and I met him then. And I told him about that, and he was very happy and all that cool stuff. And then finally, Tiffany Haddish.
Wow.
In December, she will be 40. So, all right. Those are the things that turn 40. We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next. And we'll be back tomorrow with a visit from Rick Geezer. So, but we'll tell you all about that after this. All right, everybody, stick around because Steve Grzanich and the Opening Bell is up next. We will be back tomorrow. All of regular Friday features are coming back. Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, Fly Jams Friday, and Rick Geezer will join us because baseball season is underway, and we will have a baseball-themed sports songs edition.